All right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And, yeah, and the opening bell will be at 5 o'clock. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. That is any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Get your requests in now. We'll play them a little bit later on. Coming up later in the show, after the 4 o'clock news, we are going to play back the interview that Patty and I did with the great Robert Zemeckis, one of my true heroes and idols. And his latest movie is called Welcome to Marwen, starring Steve Carell. And Patty and I saw the movie and then interviewed Robert Zemeckis. And Zemeckis is responsible for some of the greatest American movies ever made, including the Back to the Future trilogy, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Contact, Castaway. The list goes on and on and on. Used Cars, Romancing the Stone, one of the greatest American filmmakers of all time. And we got to talk to him, and we'll play that interview back in the 4 o'clock, after the 4 o'clock news. So we've got Zemeckis on the show this morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're going to talk about, Penny Marshall passed away. We're going to do a little tribute to her, talk about her and some of the memories. But she's best known. I mean, she was a sort of a revolutionary female filmmaker in terms of the fact that she was the first American woman filmmaker to make a movie that grossed over $100 million. And she actually did it twice. But again, most people remember her as Laverne DeFazio and Laverne and Shirley, and we're going to talk about that. And that'll lead us into our conversation about the greatest sitcom characters of all time and some of the funniest TV characters of all time. 312-981-7200, because Laverne and Shirley was a pretty legendary show, and I'm going to go into in details about that, and then we'll talk about her career and her life. Penny Marshall, she was 75 years old, passed away yesterday, and we'll talk about her, and that'll segue into the funniest sitcom characters, funniest TV characters of all time, of which I think Laverne DeFazio is one of them. And then we got some holiday cookie topic to get to a little bit later on before we are joined by Robert Zemeckis for the interview that Patty and I did. So that's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for talk and text and Wildcard Wednesday requests. Also, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, and that is facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also subscribe to our podcasts. We have tons of people who listen to our podcast, and we really appreciate that. It's one of the convenient ways that you can listen to the show if you're not up in the middle of the night. And so go to iTunes or any places where you get your podcast. Subscribe to the Nick D Show podcast. It'll come automatically to your device. It'll be delivered, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So there it is. It's Wednesday, and we are here. And let me talk to my great producer, Dan Shugrue. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
All right, man. How about yourself?
I'm all right. Very excited to play back our interview with Zemeckis, who is obviously, as you know, I kind of like him.
Yeah, just a bit.
I admire him, kind of. Which is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, so we're excited to play that back. Did you watch Laverne and Shirley when you were here?
You know, it was one of those. It was on Nick at Night here and there. I don't know if I ever caught a full episode, mm-hmm. but, you know, definitely saw bits and pieces of it.
And then she ended up directing some very successful movies, including A League of Their Own, which is, I'm the only person on the planet that doesn't like that movie.
You are the only person I know that does not like that movie.
I truly am the only person on the planet that kind of hates that movie. But, you know, God bless her, you know, it was a huge success. And people really love it. I know you really like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think Patty really likes it too.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Patty really likes it too, but I don't know, man. I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried, but she directed Big, which is a terrific movie. Jumpin' Jack Flash, which is one of the first, she came in and took over for the director, and that was her first big break, as a director. It was a Whoopi Goldberg movie, which is an entertaining film too. She also did The Preacher's Wife, which was the remake of The Bishop's Wife. Riding in Cars with Boys was the last movie that she directed, and that was like 16 years ago, so it was a while ago. But she's in, for me, she's always Laverne.
Sure.
You know, so we'll talk about her and celebrate her life, and then we're going to get into some, think about your favorite sitcom characters.
Yep.
The funniest favorite sitcom characters. We'll get to that as well. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Vic is off this morning, so Don Kleppen is in the newsroom. Don, how are you?
Hi. Good, Nick. How are you doing?
All right. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right. We're going to jump into some really cool stuff here. What we're going to do, let's take a break, Dan, when we come back, we will talk about Penny Marshall, and if you guys want to jump in with any of your thoughts on Penny Marshall as an actress, as a director, as an entertainer, as a groundbreaker in terms of female filmmaking. We would love to hear from you. So Penny Marshall passed away. We'll talk about her and her life and her career right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Please jump in with your thoughts on Penny Marshall. And when we come back, we'll jump into it.
Yeah. Classic.
Remember when they had TV theme songs, Dan? You remember those days?
Yes, fondly.
When they had really cool theme songs for TV shows, those days don't exist anymore. And a listener requested that. See, the Wildcard Wednesday, our listeners, you know, they help out with the themes of the show. Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin, requested the Laverne and Shirley theme song. Obviously, you know, timely. So, it's Wildcard Wednesday. Get your requests in. You made Wildcard Wednesday. And that is any artist, any song, any thin. 312-981-7200. So that's the theme from Laverne and Shirley, which was a massively successful show. I don't think people remember just how popular that show was. It debuted in 76. You know, it was a spinoff of Happy Days, which was created by Penny Marshall's brother, Gary Marshall. Penny Marshall, who would star as Laverne with Cindy Williams on Laverne and Shirley for many years, at the peak of its popularity, it was the number one show on television. It was like a 1-2 punch of that and Happy Days. They were like the big ones. There was a time when Gary Marshall's shows dominated the ratings, dominated the top 10. I mean, you had so many of the Gary Marshall's successful stuff that happened in the 70s and into the early 80s, and many of them were spinoffs of Happy Days, including Mork and Mindy, which is another show that had massive success. And, you know, there's a time Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley, Mork and Mindy, these shows were just the height of popularity, especially when I was a teenager at that time. And I remember, you know, vividly watching those shows and how popular they were and how everybody would talk about them the next day. We lost Penny Marshall. She was 75 years old. Let's read a little bit about her and then talk about her career, which was an interesting one and a fascinating one. And she went from, you know, performer to groundbreaking director and filmmaker. Actress Penny Marshall, who found fame in TV's Laverne and Shirley before going on to direct such beloved films as Big and A League of Their Own, died. She was 75. Marshall died peacefully in her Hollywood home, Hollywood Hills home, on Monday night due to complications from diabetes. The spokesperson for the family, Michelle Bega, says, "Our family is heartbroken over the passing of Penny Marshall," the Marshall family said in a statement. Marshall, whose real name was Carol Marshall, grew up in the Bronx. Her brother was famed producer and director Gary Marshall, who directed a string of hit movies, including Pretty Woman, The Princess Diaries, and he died in 2016. Marshall's role as outspoken tomboy Laverne DeFazio in the Happy Days spinoff Laverne and Shirley catapulted the actress to celebrity in the late 70s. Her gift for physical comedy helped earn her accolades, including 3 Golden Globe nominations. The Show, co-starring Cindy Williams as Shirley Feeney, Laverne's co-worker in a 1950s Milwaukee brewery, ran for 8 seasons from 1976 to 1983. She began her directing career by helming episodes of TV before landing her first feature film directing job with the 1986 Whoopi Goldberg action comedy Jumpin' Jack Flash. With her second film, Big, starring Tom Hanks, Marshall became the first woman to direct a movie that grossed over $100 million. She repeated that success in 1992 with the film A League of Their Own, which chronicles a women's baseball league in the 40s and featured an all-star cast that included Gina Davis and Madonna. Lori Petty. Come on now. I'm not an articulate person, but I have a strange combination of insecurity and fearlessness, Marshall once said to on CNN. She also directed the films Awakenings with Robert De Niro and Robin Williams, Renaissance Man with Danny DeVito, Riding in Cars with Boys with Drew Barrymore, and The Preacher's Wife, the remake of the 1947 film starring Whitney Houston and Denzel Washington. Marshall was married twice. Her second marriage was to actor and director Rob Reiner, who grew up across the street from her in New York City. It was a very wide street, Marshall once joked on CNN. She had a daughter, Tracy, from her first marriage, whom Reiner later adopted. On Tuesday, following the news of Marshall's death, Reiner wrote in a statement posted on social media, "I loved Penny. I grew up with her. She was born with a great gift. She was born with a funny bone and the instinct of how to use it. I was very lucky to have lived with her and her funny bone, and I will miss her." A celebration of Marshall's life will be held at a later date to be announced by the family. Marshall is survived by her older sister, Ronnie, daughter and actress Tracy Reiner, and three grandchildren. We hope her life continues to inspire others to spend time with family, work hard, and make all of their dreams come true, Vega said. So, sad news. Penny Marshall, you know, the first time I remember seeing Penny Marshall was actually before Laverne and Shirley. Because it wasn't mentioned in this obit, but she got her first, I think her first, you know, she was on a few TV shows here and there. But, like, her first big break came because Gary Marshall was the executive producer and creator of the Neil Simon adaptation of the TV version of The Odd Couple with Jack Klugman and Tony Randall. And in the last, I think it was three seasons of that show, she was a semi-regular. She played Myrna, Oscar's secretary, and she was hilarious on that show. And then, and that's the first time I remember seeing Penny Marshall. I think Penny Marshall also was on, you know, I think she did a couple of Love American Styles here and there, but she did, you know, spotty TV work at that time. But, like, her first big break was Myrna on The Odd Couple. She auditioned, I don't know if people might not know this, she auditioned for Gloria for All in the Family, along who at the time she was married to Rob Reiner. Rob Reiner got the part as Mike Stivic, but she didn't, obviously she didn't get the part Sally Struthers did, but she did audition. It would have been an interesting dynamic to see if Penny had, you know, if Penny Marshall had actually gotten the part as Gloria. But, and that's always a weird thing too, is thinking back on how different it would have been if somebody else would have played these parts. Because, I mean, you can't think of, you know, you can't think of anybody but Sally Struthers playing, you know, Gloria. But anyway, so I don't know if people remember her from The Odd Couple. If you guys remember her from The Odd Couple, she was really funny on that show. And there were some really great subplots involving her on The Odd Couple. They brought her in, you know, Gary Marshall brought her in, she was just hilarious on it. And I remember as a kid watching The Odd Couple and remembering, you know, just how funny. I didn't know who she was or anything at that point. And then when Laverne and Shirley came on, I recognized her, and I was like, is that the girl who played Oscar's secretary on The Odd Couple? And indeed it was. So what happened was how, you know, I mean, The Odd Couple stuff was just, it was great, like I said. And you can watch The Odd Couple. They repeat it on MeTV. Now, it's, I can't remember what time it's on, but if you go back to some of those episodes and look for Penny Marshall, because she was really hilarious on that show, and really, you know, got her chops going on that one. So what happened was, Gary Marshall found a lot of success with Happy Days. I mean, he had success before that, obviously. I just mentioned The Odd Couple and some of the other things that he did as a producer and as a writer. It was Happy Days that really just went through the roof and, you know, was the first thing that Gary Marshall, you know, produced that really became a sensation. Like, I mean, like through the roof, number one in the ratings, pop culture everywhere, you know, providing America with catchphrases and memorable characters. And again, it was water cooler stuff. This is the kind of stuff that we would go to school the next day and talk all about the Fonz and Richie and the Cunninghams and all that stuff. So there was an episode of Happy Days where they wanted to bring in a couple of dates for the guys. And they were going to be these girls from Milwaukee. And it was Laverne and Shirley. And Cindy Williams got cast as Shirley. And then Penny Marshall came in. Gary Marshall cast her as Laverne. And it's weird, though, if you go back and watch that episode where they go out on the date with Laverne and Shirley. Laverne and Shirley are different kind of characters than they ended up being in the series. They were edgier. They were a little, excuse my term here, they were a little sluttier. They were loose. And they had a lot more edge than the characters on Happy Days. Because the Happy Days characters were pretty wholesome, and it was, you know, sort of, you know, pretty G-rated kind of stuff. And they came in and they added a little PG element to it. And those characters, when they finally did get the spinoff, when Laverne and Shirley did start, they changed the characters to be a lot more wholesome and not exactly the way they were. So it's an inconsistent thing, but that happens on spinoffs all the time. And that happens on TV shows all the time. You know, some characters start out a certain way and completely change. You just look at the early episodes of The Simpsons or the episodes of The Simpsons that appeared on the Tracy Ullman show. They don't even look like the Simpsons as they, you know, evolved. So, yeah, the Laverne and Shirley episode of Happy Days was very successful, so successful. And the chemistry between Cindy Williams and Penny Marshall was evident the moment they got together. It was said that during rehearsals, they just knocked it out of the wall, out of the park, and that they got along immediately. They took to each other, and their timing was amazing, and what they were doing physically was great, and they got along really well. And at that time, Gary Marshall was probably the biggest producer on TV and could produce or create any show that he wanted. So he created Laverne and Shirley and gave it to those two actresses. And then that became a thing of its own. We'll talk more about it. And if you guys want to jump in, I happen to adore Laverne and Shirley. I love that show. And I think the two leads are fantastic. Well, I love everything about that show. But so we're going to talk about Laverne and Shirley and a little bit more about Penny Marshall. If you guys want to jump in, we're remembering Penny Marshall. She passed away at 75 on Monday night. So if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We'll break. The news is coming up after this. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. Dan, you know, Wildcard Wednesday is slowly morphing into TV theme show Wednesday.
Yes, very much so.
Glenn requesting the Jimmy Stewart Show theme song for Wildcard Wednesday. It's Wildcard Wednesday mid-year! And that is any artist, any song, anything. You pick the bumps, we play them. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. By the way, in a few months, I'm showing up a couple of Jimmy Stewart movies back-to-back in a few months for my film club. Keep an eye out for that. In March, we're going to show Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And in April, we're going to show The Man Who Knew Too Much, the Alfred Hitchcock movie. So we've got our lineup all the way through May picked out. So a couple of Jimmy Stewart movies coming up in a few months. So keep your eye out and like my film club on Facebook. So there you go. And by the way, my film club, I'm having an extra screening. I'm hosting a screening this weekend of the new Robert Zemeckis movie. We're going to talk with Robert Zemeckis later on the show. He'll be we'll play back the interview at 4 o'clock. His new movie is called Welcome to Marwen, and it stars Steve Carell. It's based on a true story, and it's an incredible movie, and I'm hosting a screening of it at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movico, the 7:10 showing. So go to amctheaters.com, get your tickets. I'm going to introduce the movie, and then we'll talk about it afterwards, and we'll talk about Zemeckis' career and all that cool stuff. The latest from Robert Zemeckis. As part of, we are extending Zemeckis Fest as much as we can, I guess, this year. We showed five months in a row, we showed a Zemeckis movie. We did Used Cars, we did Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Back to the Future Part 3. And now we figured, since he's got this new movie out, Mike Kurz, who helps me program the Nick DiGilio Film Club at the AMC Rosemont 18, said, hey, why don't you host a screening of Marwen? And I've already seen the movie, and it's magnificent, and I'm very excited to share it with my film club and you guys. So come on out. Parking is free. I think it's only $8.99 to get in to see the movie. And all the information is at amctheaters.com. The 7:10 showing is what you're looking for. So if you go to amctheaters.com, look for the 7:10 showing of Welcome to Marwen. I will introduce it. It'll be part of the film club, and then we'll talk a little bit about it afterwards. It's going to be fun. That's Saturday night at 7:10. So, all right. We were just talking about Penny Marshall. Penny Marshall passed away just this past Monday night from complications due to diabetes. And she, along with Cindy Williams, had an incredible run on Laverne and Shirley from 1976 to 1983. And the show itself was created around these two characters that were created by Gary Marshall for Happy Days. And then, as I said before the break, they were a little bit different with their appearances on Happy Days than they were when they got their own show. The thing that I loved most about, Laverne and Shirley, well, first of all, I loved all the characters on the show. I mean, Lenny and Squiggy, come on, Lenny and Squiggy. You got it. What are you kidding? Are you kidding me? That's the two of my favorite characters in the history of television. They always were funny. I love the Big Ragu. I love Laverne's father. I thought it was hilarious. I can't remember the actor's name who played Laverne's father, but he was always consistently hilarious. And I just, there were a lot of guest stars that would come on the show who, if you go back, and another interesting thing about going back and watching these shows on Antenna TV or MeTV or whatever, these shows from the 60s or the 70s, is spotting people who became famous. That's always, that's another one of those great, because it's always fun and nostalgic to watch the old shows. They bring back a lot of memories and you like them from your, when you were younger or when you were a kid. But it's also really neat to spot people who would go on to be superstars. And that's the case with Laverne and Shirley. A lot of people who appeared on that show as just minor characters or for one episode, you know, you go, oh my God, I can't believe it's that person. And so that's always fun to do when you're watching the old Antenna TV or MeTV marathons and stuff like that. But the thing that I loved most about Laverne and Shirley was the chemistry between Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams. And, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say that they rivaled, they were in this, and I think they were in the same camp as Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance. And I think that they were the 70s, they were the 70s generation, you know, like they were my generation's Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance. And the producers knew that, Gary Marshall knew that, and they played up that stuff all the time. And they would put them in similar situations that were just variations on some of the stuff that Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance did back on I Love Lucy and some of the other Lucy shows. And that chemistry between Lucy and Vivian was palpable and amazing. And the physical stuff that they did. And that's the stuff that I loved the most on Laverne and Shirley. Both Cindy Williams and Penny Marshall, especially Penny Marshall, were so adept at physical comedy. And physical comedy and slapstick are two of my favorite things. I'm always a sucker for farce and situations that are completely out of control. And the physical stuff that they did was monumentally funny and just great and consistent. There was a stretch of time when they would put them in the middle of physical, like every episode would have some sort of physical challenge to it that they would have to go through, and they would, you know, execute that stuff perfectly. Like great physical comedians they were. And they were just, and again, the chemistry between the two of them, you believed the friendship, you know, you believed their emotions, their characters were distinct and different. I really loved Laverne and Shirley. It was one of my favorite shows, man. And I watched it every week when I was a kid and when I was younger and into my teenage years, every week. Now, when they moved it out to California, you know, like any show that goes on for, you know, seven, eight years, It loses a step. And the last couple of seasons of Laverne and Shirley, like many, many shows, weren't nearly as strong as the earlier seasons. I thought it was a mistake when they moved the show to California. It didn't make a lot of sense because Milwaukee was actually, it felt like a character on that show. Like the location of Laverne and Shirley was very important to the show, was very important to the you know, where the show was coming from and its voice and all that stuff. So moving it to, you know, in some sort of desperate attempt to, you know, when a show's on for a long time, the ratings drop. This happens all the time. You know, they try to add, Dan, in this case, they moved the location, they add a couple of characters, but they didn't add a cute kid, which is usually where they go. It's usually a cute kid or Ted McGinley. That's usually where when you know a show's in trouble, it's been on too long, they try to spice it up, put in a cute kid or Ted McGinley, and there you go. But they just moved the whole location for Laverne and Shirley, and it didn't work. There was a great episode where they went through it, where they had to go through an earthquake, which, you know, again, is the physical stuff that Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams were so great at doing together. And then, you know, the foils of Lenny and Squiggy, who were kind of like the counterbalance between the two, and their physical stuff was really funny. And those characters were just hilarious. And every time they made an entrance, Lenny and Squiggy, every time they made an entrance, it was funny. Because they, like, every entrance they would make. Now, you didn't watch the show, Dan, so maybe you don't know this or not, but every entrance that they would make, they wouldn't knock on the door. They would bust the door open and walk in together, Lenny and Squiggy. And that's Michael McKean and David L. Lander. And so they had those affected weird voices, you know, hey, how's it going? And that kind of thing. But every one of their entrances was preceded by a line similar to this. Okay, don't be an idiot. Hello. And then they walk in. So, like, everything is, like, set up, like, you know, why are you acting like such a moron? Hello! And so there was always, like, some setup that they would call each other stupid, or they'd say the word idiot or moron or you know, stupid, and the door would bust open, and in would walk Lenny and Squiggy, because they're idiots. And so and it was funny every single time. Every single time. I remember one night we were I directed this show called Congratulations for Not Killing Anyone, which is one of my favorite shows that I've ever directed. My buddy Matt O'Neill wrote it, and we had a rough run with that one because we ran that in the early summer of 1997. The bulls killed our houses, man. They killed our houses. So, I mean, you know, it ultimately was pretty successful. It was okay, but it was a show that should have done much better. It was our fault for scheduling it. You know, we scheduled it right during the playoff run in 1997. So it was like there were nights when we had to cancel several performances because maybe two people would show up, and we had this the rule in storefront theater, at least when I did storefront theater, was you had the fair fight rule. If the cast could fight the audience, you know, if that's the fair fight rule. There were nine people in Congratulations. It was a nine cast member show. So that was our cutoff point, was nine. So if we had less than nine, we would cancel the show. That was what the deal was, a fair fight rule. The problem with the fair fight rule is I directed a show with 28 people in it, and we chucked the fair fight rule out on that one. That was it was 28 people in the show, and I was like, we're not going to cancel for 27. That's not going to be. But anyway, we canceled a lot of shows, and then we did the show at Angel Island, which was on right off of Broadway and Sheridan, it was Rich Katovsky ran it, and it was great. It was Mary Archie Theater Company was the home, and so we did our show there, and it was the second floor, so you had to go up the stairs, you know, to see the thing, and the theater was on the second floor, and the first floor was a liquor store, so. Inevitably, when we'd cancel, we would just go downstairs to the liquor store and bring up a bunch of beer and some booze and stuff, and we'd usually put a TV on the stage and watch the bowls or whatever. So one night we canceled a show, and the centerpiece of the set were these really wonderful swinging doors, you know, like a saloon kind of a thing, but they were full length. And you could push the hell out of them. The set designer was fantastic. And their set builder, like, you could push these things hard because I wanted people to make entrances would slam their hands on the door and the door would fly open. It was very high energy. It was a farce. So we cancel a show. We watch the Bulls. The Bulls end up winning. We are now like half in the bag. Okay, we've been sitting in the theater now for like 3 hours and we're drunk. And so Scott Oaken and Steve Walker start imitating Lenny and Squiggy. And so, and I'm not kidding you. We would have them go behind those swinging doors. And then we would set them up for an entrance. So, and I'm not kidding when I say we did this for like an hour and a half. It was just back to back to back. Somebody would throw out a line like, oh, look at these two jackasses. Hello! And they would smash the swinging doors open and say, hello! And then we'd laugh for 20 minutes. Then they'd go back behind the door and we'd set it. And we did that for an hour and a half. Because everybody in that room was around. We were around the same age. I was a little bit older than maybe a couple other people in the room. Everybody grew up watching Laverne and Shirley, and everybody loved Lenny and Squiggy, and those entrances were just genius. So we literally spent an hour and a half like a bunch of idiots in this theater after watching the Bulls game doing Lenny and Squiggy entrances. That's how we spent a significant portion of one evening. That's how big a deal those stupid entrances were. So they were a great counterpoint, and everything about that show I thought worked, and I just loved it. And the key reason why that show was so successful and so good was because of the incredible chemistry and the incredible talent of the two female leads, of Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams. And it's not an exaggeration to say that they were the Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance of my generation, and especially Penny Marshall. Penny Marshall did the physical stuff better than anybody on that show. So. Anyway, we got some texts coming in. We're talking about Penny Marshall. She passed away, and then not only was she hugely successful on TV, but she became hugely successful and groundbreaking as a female filmmaker. I shouldn't say female film, as a filmmaker. She became, like, an incredibly successful director. So we'll talk a little bit more about Penny Marshall, who just passed away. And if you want to jump in with any of your memories and what you loved about Laverne and Shirley or her movies, 312-981-7200. We'll jump back into it after this. It just keeps going, Dan. Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. That's 773 area code requesting the WKRP in Cincinnati theme. I prefer the closing credits, WKRP. That's a jam. The closing credits theme for WKRP in Cincinnati is an absolute jam. It's a jam. I love that. I also love the fact that it had a different theme. You know, there weren't a lot of like different themes for the end credits. It was usually a refrain of, you know, whatever the regular theme was. But that's a completely different song and completely different style. I remember I would actively, when I watched KRP, which I did often, I would always watch the through the closing credits just so I could hear the jam at the end. By the way, Dan, thanks for looking it up. Phil Ofster played Laverne's father. He was hilarious. Hi, how you doing? We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here. We're here till 5 o'clock. The opening bell comes up at 5. Steve Cochran, Justin Kaufman is in for Steve Cochran. Cochran? Yeah, he's new to the city. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. We're talking about Penny Marshall. She passed away. At the age of 75, and did so much stuff, was so successful on Laverne and Shirley. And I first remember her from The Odd Couple, and then went on to become an incredibly successful director. And she just passed away, and everybody's very sad about it. And everybody has their own sort of favorite thing about Penny Marshall. And I know that a lot of people, loved her film, A League of Their Own, and then it was a movie that a lot of people really have an emotional attachment to, and she directed that. That's maybe one of their favorite things that they do. For me, I just loved her work on Laverne and Shirley and everything else. Steve in Indian Head Park says, I'm thinking of Cindy Williams right now. She must be heartbroken. Those two ladies rivaled Lucille Ball. That's what I was saying. Lucille Ball, Vivian Vance of that generation. 847 area code, you have to mention that she would sing The Rubber Tree Plant and Ant Can't Move That Rubber Tree Plant. Yeah. 217 area code says, a memorable episode was when Laverne got attacked by a department store robot and got sued for damages. See, that's what I'm talking about. They would put her in situations, they would put both Laverne and Shirley in situations where they're getting attacked by robots and stuff. You know? I'm trying to remember if they actually did have an episode where they were, well, I mean, they worked on the line at Schott's Brewery. You know, where conveyor belts would go by, but I'm trying to remember if they put them in a specific situation with a conveyor belt and stuff coming on it as a complete tribute to the chocolate episode, to the chocolate candy episode of I Love Lucy. I don't even know if they were, I don't remember if they were that blatant, but it was very clear that they were doing homages and tributes to the kind of stuff that Lucille Ball and Vivian Vance would do. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right.
I think I might have seen one or two episodes of Laverne and Shirley, but I remember Penny Marshall even before that from the movie Scarecrow with Al Pacino and Gene Hackman, where she plays Pacino's estranged wife and has a kind of harrowing phone call with him at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that movie?
Oh, yeah. It's been a long... I completely forgot she was in it. I haven't seen Scarecrow.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Scarecrow.
Yeah, because it took me a while to realize this is the same chick from the end of the movie.
Yeah,
here, man.
Yeah, I completely forgot that that she was in Scarecrow. And I seriously haven't seen Scarecrow in maybe 30 years.
I think I saw it back in 74 when it came out or something like that.
Yeah, but wow, that's something.
Totally opposite from Laverne and Shirley, man.
Yeah, completely. Completely. Man, oh, man. All right. All right. Thanks for pointing that out, man.
Hey, take care, buddy.
All right, buddy. Take care. There you go. That's something that's unusual right there. I'm going to look her up and see what other stuff that she acted in that we might have forgotten about. But obviously, we all remember her from Laverne and Shirley and a lot of her other appearances. But let's see. She was in, let's go back here. She's in Where's Papa, which is a movie that Gary Marshall actually directed. She started out as a dancer on the Jackie Gleason show. She was on two episodes of That Girl with Marlo Thomas, Love American Style. She was on. She was in the TV series. She had an appearance in the TV series version of Barefoot in the Park. Evil Roy Slade, she was in. She was in the Bob Newhart show. She had a couple appearances on that. She was in Paul Sand and Friends and Lovers, which was a show that they tried to get off the ground after that. She appeared on Mary Tyler Moore's show a few times, Blansky's Beauties. She was, she has one scene in 1941, which was written, by the way, by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale. Directed by, she's in the best scene in the movie. She's in 1941, and it's during the contest, the dancing contest scene. And it's Joe Flaherty plays like the MC, the guy who runs the club where they're having the jitterbug competition. And she's got an exchange with Joe Flaherty in that movie that's absolutely hilarious. So she appeared in that kind of stuff. And then that's when she started to go in. She made a few appearances here and there, and that's when she went into the filmmaking side when she started to direct. She made cameos in other movies and short things. And she was the first here's an interesting fact about Penny Marshall, Dan. She's the first celebrity to voice a character on The Simpsons outside of the regular cast. You know what I mean? She was the first celebrity to ever voice, like a guest celebrity to ever voice on The Simpsons. So she's got that. She has that distinction as well. So. All right. Why don't we take a break here, guys? We'll talk a little bit more about Penny Marshall. And then we're going to jump into the funniest sitcom characters of all time, the funniest TV characters of all time, because I think Laverne DeFazio belongs on that list. And we want to hear from you guys. What do you think? 312-981-7200 with the funniest TV characters ever right here on 720 WGN. Remembering Penny Marshall, who was such a talent. And she will be missed. Okay, 312-981-7200 for that and for your Wildcard Wednesday requests. We're going to break. The news is coming up after this. Wildcard Wednesday continues. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday! Which, again, has turned into TV Theme Show Wednesday. 847 area code requesting the Golden Girls theme song. So, there you go. That's one of those classic. That's a classic one. Golden Girls theme. Thank you for being a friend. Welcome back, everybody. It's Nick DiGilio here live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. The opening bell at 5. Justin Kaufman is in for Steve Cochran this morning at 6. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. If you want to jump in here, we're going to talk about the funniest sitcom characters of all time, the TV's funniest characters. Because of the passing of Penny Marshall, I would choose Laverne DeFazio as one of the funniest characters that I remember. So Penny Marshall passed away, and we were remembering her and her life. And I want to mention one more thing before we get into just the funniest sitcom characters all over the place, and get to your phone calls and your texts at 312-981-7200 on that topic. I want one more appearance that Penny Marshall made I want to mention. Albert Brooks made a movie that, unfortunately, not a lot of people saw. It's called Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. He made it about 10 years ago, 10, 11 years ago. And almost all of Albert Brooks's movies, it's brilliant. And it's absolutely hilarious and worth seeing. And the movie came out. It came and went. Nobody went to see it. But I think it's, I think it's one of the best movies Albert Brooks has made. And Penny Marshall has an appearance at the beginning of the movie. She plays herself. Albert Brooks comes in, who plays himself. He plays Albert Brooks. He comes in and wants to be considered for the remake that Penny Marshall is making of the classic Jimmy Stewart movie about the Invisible Rabbit, Harvey. And she's only in one scene. Penny Marshall is only in one scene. It's at the very beginning of the film. And it's hysterical. She is absolutely hilarious in this. And I personally, just in general, I think more people should see looking for comedy in the Muslim world, just in general. But if you want to look back at something that Penny Marshall did that you might not have known about that's really, really funny, check out Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World. And this first scene that she's in, where she cannot hide her disdain for Albert Brooks. Like, it's, she can't stand, she clearly can't stand him, doesn't want him for, you know, for the movie. And it is this really, really hilarious sort of tension-filled scene where it's so clear that Penny Marshall cannot stand Albert Brooks and barely hide, you know, her hatred and disdain for this guy. It's a hilarious scene. It really is hilarious, and Penny Marshall just knocks it out of the park. She's only in the one scene at the beginning of the movie. But trust me, if you just watch the one scene in the beginning of the movie, you will watch the rest of the movie, because Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World is brilliant and hilarious, and everybody should see it. But I just wanted to mention this appearance that she made in this movie, because nobody saw the movie. Nobody saw the movie. And it was, I think, you know, she hadn't appeared in a bunch of stuff at that time. Like, so like, to see her in that movie was like, oh my God, look, it's Penny Marshall. She hadn't been in the public eye for a long time at that point. Like, her last movie was, I think, 7 years before that as a director, and, you know, wasn't making a ton of appearances, you know, in other things. And then all of a sudden, here's this really brilliant, hilarious scene where she's playing herself, just kind of ripping apart Albert Brooks. It's great. And anytime, you know, Albert Brooks, I mean, that's part of the great humor of Albert Brooks, is that, you know, he gets ripped apart a lot in his comedy. You know, it's very self-deprecate. And so, yeah. So anyway, you should check it out. It's Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, and Penny Marshall's her appearance in that at the beginning is just brilliant. So, all right, funniest TV characters of all time. What do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Sitcom characters, funniest characters ever. 312-981-7200, because I think Laverne DeFazio is one of them, played brilliantly by Penny Marshall. Dan, did you have one pop into your head as one of your favorites? I know there are a ton of them, and we'll get to all of them.
Yeah, you know, and kind of along that line, I couldn't pick one from this show, but it's one of my favorite shows, and there's basically every episode, one of these characters makes me laugh out loud, which doesn't happen much anymore, and that's the cast of Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Oh, man.
So you can take any one of those characters.
You're right.
Usually it's Andre Brower, but, yeah, you know, sometimes it's, you know,
Terry Crews, yeah, sometimes Andy Samberg. Chelsea Peretti.
Yes. So, I mean, it's just a
January 10th. January 10th, it comes back on NBC. Thank you, NBC,
yes,
for picking it up.
Yes.
Because after Fox canceled it, that's a brilliantly funny show.
Absolutely.
I mean, and consistently funny. Like, every week, it is laugh-out-loud funny. I'm with you on that. I mean, that's the sign of a good show.
Right.
Where it's like, I can't really single out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sign of a really great cast,
right,
and, you know, an ensemble, like,
right,
a true ensemble. There is not one weak link in that cast. Everybody is funny on that show. Everybody. I don't know. Well, Chelsea Peretti is, I don't know, there's just something about that character.
Right.
She may edge out just for me.
She's definitely got the choicest lines,
yeah,
out of everybody.
Yeah. And she's, you know, the most snarky of anybody on the show. I mean, the thing about Andre Brower on that show, on Brooklyn Nine-Nine, is he brilliantly plays it straight. That's the
right
thing. Well,
right.
I mean, no pun intended, because he's gay on the show, but he plays it. He does not play the comedy at all, and that's why it works so well. Is that he plays it very seriously, and very rarely has, like, sort of laugh lines, or any kind of wackiness, and that's his stoicism is one of the reasons why everything he does on that show is funny. I love that show. God, I love that show. I'm so glad it's coming back. January. Mark, I wonder if we're going to talk with Dan tomorrow, Feinberg. I wonder if he's seen any of the new season.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah, we'll have to find out tomorrow when we talk to Dan Feinberg. All right. Well, like Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Dan, I like pretty much all the characters, all the characters on the show, on this show that I'm about to mention. But of course, I have to go with George Costanza on Seinfeld. I think George Costanza is one of the funniest characters. I'm one of the best TV characters of all time. I just, everything It being the first. Okay, wait. Let me just specify this. That show was on for 8 seasons. For about 6.5 seasons, George Costanza was great, and then they made him a raving lunatic during the, especially the last season. And I've mentioned this before, that the dealership, the auto dealership episode, where Costanza goes nuts because somebody stole his Twix candy bar. He's a raving lunatic in that episode, and it was consistently on that level of really like loud, annoying, not nearly as funny as Costanza was earlier. They have him listed here. He's dumb, he's balding, and he has nothing going for him. He's the kind of character America loves to root for. More importantly, his misfortune is fun to laugh at. And that's basically, that's George Costanza in a nutshell. And you know, I've mentioned before, my favorite episode of Seinfeld of all time is The Opposite, which is the one where George decides that, you know, every instinct that he has is bad, so he's going to do the opposite, and suddenly he becomes successful. And it's a brilliant episode, and it sums up the Costanza character perfectly. I mean, absolutely perfectly. And if you are a fan, particularly of George Costanza on Seinfeld, as a Seinfeld fan in general, but if Costanza is your favorite character, then The Opposite has got to be, it's a treat for all of the people who love George Costanza. I love that episode. It's my favorite. That's also the episode where George becomes successful. He gets the job with the Yankees. Jerry is even Steven. He just evens out all the time. Julia Louis-Dreyfus is Elaine is she's switching with George and becoming unsuccessful. So her luck is on the downturn. And then Kramer does the press tour for his coffee table book. And that's when he's on Regis and Kelly or Kathy Lee. And he spits the coffee all over the place. That's all in one episode. All of that stuff is in one episode. But yeah, Costanza, when someone says funniest TV characters of all time, George Costanza, first character that pops into my head. So, and there are, I mean, obviously there are a ton more. Who would you pick if you had to pick one character from The Simpsons, like The Simpsons in their heyday? Which character from The Simpsons would you pick? Is there one that you would pick, Dan?
I think I got to go Homer.
Yeah.
Maybe when I was younger, it would have been Bart.
Yeah.
But looking back on the totality, the ones that I quote the most are Homer lines.
Yeah. And the thing about that is when the show first started, it was all about Bart. He was on the T-shirts everywhere. It was Cowabunga. Don't have a cow, you know, that all of that stuff. And so the character that really broke out big time was Bart, and the show was kind of about Bart. But then as the writers began to explore more, the show clearly the main character is Homer. There's no question about it. Of The Simpsons, there's so many great characters on The Simpsons, though. Of The Simpsons, Homer's my favorite Simpson. Although I like Lisa a lot. I think Lisa's great. My favorite thing about Lisa, you know what I love about Lisa?
What's that?
She laughs at Itchy and Scratchy. And she's a character written to not laugh at that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Because Lisa's the smart one,
right,
and she's
right.
The one that's highly intellectual and above everything that's happening in the family. But the fact is, she laughs at Itchy and Scratchy, and that's the stupidest thing in the world, and she laughs at it. And that's my most endearing characteristic of Lisa Simpson, is that she actually laughs her ass off at Itchy and Scratchy. And I just love that about her. But of like the other, you know, the Springfield, Ralph is my favorite. Ralph is my favorite. Hi, liar. I love everything. I love the voice. That's, you know, and there's speculation. Have you, you know, these conspiracy sort of internet things that Wiggum is not really his dad. Have you heard about this?
No.
That he looks like, oh God, what's the character? Ralph looks like a different cop. He looks like one of the other Springfield cops. And there's all these conspiracy, all these goofballs on the internet who are like, I don't think Ralph I don't think Chief Wiggum is really Ralph's father. They think that his mother had an affair with one of the other cops on the Springfield force because Ralph doesn't look at anything like Chief Wiggum. And I don't know who it is. I don't know. But I saw it online someplace.
Yeah, some Eddie is the name that's popping up.
Eddie? Eddie, who's on the police force, who's on the Springfield police force, is secretly Ralph Wiggum's dad. Like, Chief Wiggum's wife had an affair with one of his own partners. You got to love the internet. All right. Who are the funniest characters of all time? Funniest TV characters of all time, sitcoms, and great, hilarious TV characters. Who are your favorites and the funniest? 312-981-7200. Phone lines and text lines are open. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. It is Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday here. 312-981-7200 if you want to make your request. Mike requesting Jonathan Colton with Chiron Beta Prime. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Allstate Skyline Studios, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday, 312-981-7200. We're talking about the funniest sitcom characters of all time or the funniest TV characters ever. We lost Penny Marshall. She passed away, and she played Laverne DeFazio on Laverne and Shirley, obviously, and I consider that to be one of the funniest characters in TV. And so that inspired me to jump on this topic, and if you want to get in here, we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Okay, let's see. What about Kenneth from 30 Rock? A lot of great characters on 30 Rock. 30 Rock was loaded with really funny characters. But they say there are only two things he loves in the world, everybody and television. A man disillusioned by ignorant bliss in a world that doesn't care about him. It's always hilarious, but one of the best things about Kenneth's character is that there's more to him than you think. There are hints throughout the series that Kenneth might be immortal, meaning he's tricked us all into thinking that we're laughing at him. That we were laughing at him, and it's genius. Jack McBrayer plays the character, he does a tremendous job. But 30 Rock is loaded with funny characters. There are just a ton of great characters on 30 Rock. I think Alec Baldwin as Jack Donaghy is brilliant on that show. I love Jenna, the character Jenna. I think Jane Krakowski's great on that. Liz Lemon is great. A lot of great characters on 30 Rock. I'd probably go with Donaghy. I'd probably go with Alec Baldwin on that as the funniest character on that show. They have the little write up here. Jack Donaghy and Liz Lemon are both here, but it's important to note that they each need each other to make it work. They work so well off of one another, and their on-screen chemistry is palpable. Jack is the perfect foil to Liz, and no one could play him like Alec Baldwin did. Agree with that 100%. So, what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Got on the topic here because we lost Penny Marshall, and now we're talking about the funniest TV characters of all time. What are your thoughts on this? Here's Mark on WGN. Hi, Mark.
Green from Cleveland, and once again, happy holidays.
Thank you.
Yeah, I wanted to nominate the Belcher family from Bob's Burgers. Oh. I think that is easily the funniest show on the air right now, at least until Brooklyn Nine-Nine comes back. And those characters are just so hilarious, but at the same time, so lovable. And, you can see that they care for each other, but they're always funny enough to keep it from getting too sentimental. And I would say out of the family, the three kids are the funniest, but I mean, there isn't a bad character on that show.
Yeah, that's a really strong show, a very funny show. That's one of those shows, Mark, that's kind of under the radar. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a ton of people watch that show, but the people who watch it are very passionate about it and spread the word. But it has not crossed over into the kind of success that, say, you know, like a Family Guy has or like a Simpsons has, which is too bad because it's better than both of those shows. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's done long enough to stand the air 9 seasons. There's going to be a movie, so who knows? Maybe it'll move into the mainstream after all. But yeah. I'm just glad that they're still making it and that it's still as good as it ever was.
Yeah, I agree. It's a terrific show. Great choice. Thank you, Mark.
Have a great show.
Okay, there you go. The characters from Bob's Burgers. Dan, you watch Bob's Burgers?
No, unfortunately, I haven't seen an episode.
It's really funny. I mean, really, really good, really funny, high-quality stuff, so...
Great music on Bob's Burgers, too.
Yeah. I just think that show is really great. I wish more people watched it. It's considered a quote-unquote cult show, but it's been on a long time. So, all right, let's break here. And when we come back after the news, we'll jump back into this. And we got a couple of lines open if you want to get in here. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the funniest characters in TV, you know, of all time. Who were your choices? 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday. 312-981-7200. It's any artist, any song, and a thin. 847 area code requesting Petula Clark with Downtown. All right, welcome back, everybody. Hey, coming up after the 4 o'clock news, the one, the only, the great Robert Zemeckis is going to join us, director of such classic movies as the Back to the Future trilogy and Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Contact and Used Cars and I Want to Hold Your Hand and Forrest Gump. I mean, I could go on. His latest movie is called Welcome to Marwen with Steve Carell and Leslie Mann. And it is a beautiful movie. It is a great movie. And, you know, he continues his streak of making great, great movies. And we'll talk about that with him. Patty Vasquez and I interviewed him. And we're gonna play that interview back with Patty and I interviewing the great Robert Zemeckis, who also happens to be from Chicago. That's coming up after 4 o'clock. So please stay tuned for that. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. For talk and text, 312-981-7200. And we are talking about the funniest TV characters of all time, the greatest sitcom characters ever, characters that make you laugh. 312-981-7200. And let's get back to that. Here's Lake Geneva Dan on WGN. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, morning, Nick. The Carol Burnett Show. Last night they had an exorcism, and Tim Conway was the priest. Mm-hmm. The wife and I almost hit the floor when he goes, business is really booming since that movie came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. is there any specific character that you think is funniest on Carol Burnett Show? Because they had so many of them.
It's Conway.
So anything that Tim Conway did?
Yeah, God, you get those two on stage, you're going to laugh.
Yeah, all right. All right, okay. Thanks, Dan. Yep. There you go. Yeah, I liked Mrs. Hawiggins. That was, I think, my favorite character. Those two characters, that Mrs. Hawiggins and the boss. I think those were my favorite characters in the Carol Burnett canon. But there's so many great characters, and obviously, you know, one of the things that became famous about the Carol Burnett Show was the actual breaking of the characters, like the characters like losing it and laughing. That became kind of one of the signature things on the show, especially Harvey Korman. Harvey Korman, it would be Tim Conway and Harvey Korman, and Tim Conway would inevitably make Harvey Korman crack up. And if you're looking for maybe one of the best examples of that, there's a bit that they did where Harvey Korman goes to visit a dentist, and the dentist is played by Tim Conway. And this is sort of a classic thing, but I think it's the most popular and maybe best example of Tim Conway making Harvey Korman lose his stuff on the stage and just completely break and crack up. And that's where he is he's a dentist, and he keeps giving himself Novocaine. Like he shoots Novocaine into his leg, then he can't feel his leg. He shoots Novocaine into his hand and his arm. And it's this great bit of physical comedy. And a lot of what Tim Conway did on the show during a lot of those sketches with Harvey Korman was he just screwed around. You know, the idea was to get off script and improvise and do wacky stuff in order to make the other people crack up. You know, there's also a great bit when they did the Mama's Family characters before Mama's Family became the TV show. The actual sitcom itself, it began as sketches on the Carol Burnett Show with Eunice and Mama and everybody. And there's one classic moment. Dick Van Dyke was the guest that night, and they're doing it, one of the Mama's Family, you know, Eunice bits, and Tim Conway. They're trying to they're playing a board game. I can't remember what board game they're playing. They might be playing Life, maybe. I'm not sure, but they're trying to play a board game. Which they did a bunch of times. They did several sketches where all they would do is sit around and play, you know, play the board game, and that's where the comedy came from. But they were playing a board game, and Tim Conway went into this improvisation about an elephant, and he goes on and on and on, and everybody on stage is losing it. Like, they're all sort of laughing, except for Vicki Lawrence. Vicki Lawrence is sitting there with a straight face, and Tim Conway's doing this weird story about an elephant and all this other stuff. And then he stops and it goes on. When you think Tim Conway's done, he continues to more, and everybody is just getting exasperated on stage and laughing. Then finally, Carol Burnett goes, okay, it's your turn, Mama. Go ahead. And then she says, and they had to beep Vicki Lawrence, and she says, "Are you sure that little blank is done talking?" And Dick Van Dyke falls off the couch, like literally falls off the couch laughing. So that's one of those great moments. But yeah, lots of memorable stuff and memorable characters that are absolutely hilarious from the Carol Burnett Show. All right, here's Matt on WGN. Hi, Matt.
Hi, good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
Before I give you my two or three that I wanted to give you, I just want to comment first on the Seinfeld. For me, the episodes that really stood out were the ones that I go back and forth between George and Kramer for me, which is the better for me. I just can't ever decide. It all depends. But anyways, I always thought the episodes when they had George's dad or when they had Newman in it, for those episodes are the ones that were my favorite. So I always think sometimes the ancillary characters are...
Well, you know...
Sometimes can really make, make a...
I mean, Jerry Stiller, as Frank Costanza, is just genius. He's hilarious. And the Newman character is great. All the characters on Seinfeld are fantastic. It's just that, for me, the core of what that show is about is Costanza. I think he represents what that show really is at its core is about. But yeah, I mean, Jerry Stiller is genius on that show. I mean, he's just hilarious.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Anyways, the two that, as soon as you mentioned what you're having a problem, the two that came out to me immediately were Ralph Crandon and Honeymooners, and then All in the Family, Archie Bunker. Those are the two that I'm in my early 60s now. And the one that from these days that came out to me was Dwight in The Office. That's the one that I really got a kick out of.
Yeah, Dwight Schrute is hilarious. That's another show that's populated with really, really funny characters. Michael Scott, because Steve Carell is hilarious on that show, too. There's a lot of funny characters on that. Yeah, that's great stuff. Okay, Matt, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, he says Ralph Crandon. I love The Honeymooners. And by the way, Jimmy from Lamont says all of the characters on The Honeymooners, they're all great. My favorite character on The Honeymooners, and that's my favorite TV show of all time. But it's Norton is my favorite. Ed Norton is my favorite character on the show, and I know that's kind of an obvious sort of easy choice. But the stuff between all four of the main characters on that show, all four of the actors on that show were geniuses. They were great. And Jackie Gleason was notorious for never rehearsing. They never rehearsed. So they were, they were flying by the seat of their pants when they were filming those classic 39 episodes. Those were they never rehearsed. So what you're seeing in those classic 39 episodes is fresh and not over rehearsed and improvisation and flying by the seat of the pants. And it all works. Not only is it funny, but it's also emotional and you really care about the characters. But for me, I think Ed Norton provides the biggest laughs on that show. He's my favorite character on that show. Mike in Ravenswood says Danny DeVito on Taxi. Louis De Palma, one of the greatest characters in the history of TV. I mean, come on now. Just an unbelievable character, Louis De Palma on Taxi. Steve says, the top of the pyramid of great sitcom characters has to be Michael Richards as Cosmo Kramer. He's up there. No question. Margaret in Bridgeport says, how about Tom Hanks and Bosom Buddies? Yeah, he was great on Bosom Buddies. They were both great. Peter Scolari, he was great. Did you ever see that show, Dan, Bosom Buddies?
No, only bits and pieces of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know the premise. They're in drag because they can stay in this woman's, this woman's hotel or woman's housing unit, and wackiness ensues. 574 area code says Steve Urkel from Family Matters gets my vote for funniest character. We're gonna have to agree to disagree on that one. And I still find it hard to believe that he was just the neighbor. And I've said this a million times on the show because I never watched the show. And what bits that I did see, the guy did not make me laugh. The Urkel character did not make me laugh at all. But when someone told me that he was actually the next-door neighbor, he didn't live in the house, I'm like, why are they letting this idiot in the house? I mean, if he doesn't live there, why are you allowing this moron to come into the house? I would just say, no, you can't come in. Door's locked. Urkel, go back home. Why are you come in here and all you do is come in and annoy everybody and break something? Why would you let him back in? Why would you let Steve Urkel back in your house after just one visit? That would be enough. If I were the guy from Die Hard, if I were Twinkie Man from Die Hard, I'd be like, no, you can't come back in the house, idiot. You're annoying and you break stuff. I remember being, seriously, Dan, I remember being stunned when I found out that he was the next door neighbor. I'm like,
totally makes sense.
Wait a minute, he doesn't live there? What? Why does he visit there? Why do they allow him in the house so much? I just assumed he was, you know, part of the family. No. I don't understand that. I still don't get it. Here's Tom on WGN. Hey, Tom.
Hi, Nick. Ray Romano on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I watch that over and over and over. I have the two seasons of that on CDs, and
yeah.
Oh my gosh!
So you like, I love it. When, you like Ray the most on the show?
Yes,
I like
yes,
I like I Ray. Do, but I like Ray's dad. I like Peter Boyle on the. I
yeah,
think,
yeah.
I think he's the
Peter Boyle.
Yeah, he's the best. I think he's the funniest character on the show.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the favorite, my most favorite. Well, Deborah, his wife, asked him. She says, "Ray, you know what I think." And Ray says, if I say yes, you still have to tell me? That cracks me up every time I hear that.
Yeah, that's a funny, that was a pretty funny show. That was one of those shows, Dan, that when it was in, thank you, Tom, for the call. And we want to hear from you guys. Funniest TV characters of all time, 312-981-7200. That was one of those shows that, again, I was late to. Like, in its prime, I didn't watch it. But when it, you know, when it went to reruns, I started, I would catch it every once. So I didn't watch it, like, regularly. But I always thought it was funny. I always thought that that the chemistry between the cast was great, and I always had a thing for Deborah. Why am I blanking on
Patricia Heaton?
Oh yeah, I always had a thing for Patricia Heaton. I always did. I don't know what it was about her, man, but I found Patricia Heaton on that show to be remarkably sexy, and I'm not really, I have no explanation for it, but like. You know, that whole subgenre of, like, how did this guy get this wife? How is it possible but this guy? You know, and that all goes back to the Honeymooners. How does Ralph Kramden get Alice? I mean, Alice is a babe. Alice is a complete babe. And then you find out because they have this great, you know, they have this great relationship. But of all of those, that stuff that happened, like, in the 90s with that, the resurgence of how did this guy get that hot wife, she was the one that, I was like, whoa. Like, I don't know. There's no explanation for it. But I always found her, like, every time I'd watch the show, you know, I'd laugh at certain things, but I'd always be like, man, Patricia Heaton, wow. I even felt that way, you know, like, I feel that way about her now, still, in general. I don't know what it is, but Patricia Heaton just does it for me. Even on The Middle, I'll watch The Middle, and I'll be like, ooh. But, like, especially on Everybody Loves Raymond. I don't know. Man, I just think she's, you know. I can't take my eyes off her when I watch the show, the reruns. I'm like, oh, look at Patricia Heaton. It's really weird. I don't know. I don't get it. But all right, let's take a quick break here, and we'll come back. And we've got a bunch of texts coming in, and we didn't even scratch the surface on some of these funniest sitcom characters and funniest TV characters of all time. In honor of the great Penny Marshall, who passed away, who played Laverne DeFazio, who was one of my favorite funny characters ever. All right. 312-981-7200. You know, oh man, I haven't heard this in a long time. And the memories that have just rushed back into my brain, that, of course, is the 12 Days of Christmas with Bob and Doug McKenzie. 773, and of course, Canadian Bill requested that. That is just brilliant. That record is just, oh my God, it's so funny, and it brings back so many memories. Dave Thomas, Rick Moranis as Bob and Doug McKenzie, and of course the genius movie Strange Brew that came out after that. Wildcard Wednesday, Yippee Wildcard Wednesday continues. 312-981-7200. Coming up, we are live in the Allstate studio, and coming up we've got the opening bell at 5 o'clock. Justin Kaufman coming up, sitting in for Steve Cochran this morning, and coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. We've been talking about some great comedy characters, great TV sitcom characters, some of the funniest characters in TV history, and we would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. What characters make you laugh? Here's Annette on WGN. Hi, Annette.
Hi, Annette. Hello. I want to commend you on your memorial. That's very sweet of you. But I go way back to Dom DeLuise and Lots of Luck. And, of course, my favorite, Tony Randall and Jack Klugman in The Odd Couple.
Yeah, we mentioned The Odd Couple because, well, first of all, the show is great. And Jack Klugman and Tony Randall were genius on that show. But we mentioned it because that's kind of the first time I ever saw Penny Marshall when she played Oscar's secretary. And I remember really thinking she was hilarious on it. And so that was the first, like, I think that was the first big breakthrough for her was on The Odd Couple. And The Odd Couple is still a very funny show. It holds up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Annette, thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Okay,
bye-bye.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. 920 area code says Jim and Taxi. Oh, man. Please. Christopher Lloyd on that show. Now, Dan, you watched Taxi, right?
No, you know, that was one of those Nick and Knight shows that I caught a few minutes here and there, but never, you know.
If you ever get a chance to catch up on it, man, that's a show that holds up. Like, that's, you know, a lot of those shows from the 70s, early 80s or whatever, some of them don't hold up as well as others, you know. Taxi and Cheers are the two that I think are as funny now as they were when they first aired. Taxi's hilarious. And Jim Ignatowski, you know, I mean, you know, Christopher Lloyd is so great on that show. And then we already mentioned Louis De Palma. Danny DeVito's character on that show is one of the greatest. That's a really smart, really... James L. Brooks created that show, so... Scott says Frank from Always Sunny, another Danny DeVito performance. Frank and Always. I don't know who my favorite character on Always Sunny is. I got to tell you, they're all a-holes. It might be Sweet D. I think D might be my favorite character on Always Sunny. There's a show that they canceled, The Mick, that I'm mad about. That Fox canceled that and Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the same time. The Mick was a funny show, man. I really like her, man. I love Caitlin Olsen. I think she's great. I think she's so funny. But yeah, Frank's a great character. All the characters on Always Sunny, man. I'll never forget my ex-wife, Heather. Like, I'd be watching it. She would literally sit down and watch about 5 minutes of it and go, why would you watch these people? What? These people are the biggest jerks ever. Why are you watching this? She'd go in the other room. She couldn't handle it. I don't think she ever saw more than 10 minutes of an episode. She would come in and sit down and go, all right, maybe I'll give it a shot. Within 10 minutes, she's like, I'm leaving. I can't. I understand. I totally understand that. I completely understand why people would hate that show. Because the characters are pretty despicable. It kills me. That show kills me. 773 area code. Hawkeye Pierce from MASH. Yeah, a lot of good characters on MASH, too. I liked... Oh, now I'm blanking on the character's name. Not the first commander played by McLean Stevenson. Frank? Why am I blanking on his name? They killed him off. And then Potter came in.
Lieutenant Colonel Henry Blake.
Henry Blake, yes, right. Henry Blake. He was my favorite. McLean Stevenson was great on MASH. Yeah, I guess Hawkeye Pierce because he was the lead, you know. 7224 area code says John Ritter as Jack Tripper is the funniest. Yeah, that's a great character. Funny, one of the funniest characters ever, Jack Tripper. And again, you want to talk about physical comedy. We were talking about how amazing Penny Marshall and Cindy Williams were at doing great, great physical bits. Man, John Ritter, oh my God. The pratfalls that he would take, Jack Tripper is one of the funniest. He's in the upper echelon of greatest TV sitcom characters of all time. And John Ritter was a genius on that show. Hey Dan, can you look and see if he won Emmys? I think he won a couple of Emmys for playing Jack Tripper, and deservedly so because he was so funny on that show. Let's see, 724 says Lucy Ricardo top five of all time. I would agree with that. And like I said before, Lucy and Ethel, the stuff that they would put Lucy and Ethel through was genius and hilarious and obviously inspired what happened on Laverne and Shirley. And, yeah.
Nominated 3 times, won once.
Nominated 3 times and he won once for Jack. At least he won once. You know? Yeah, John Ritter. Again, another guy taken from us way too young. 301 area code says, I loved the Fonz and Alex, Oscar and Felix were so funny. Yeah, and Happy Days, everybody's favorite character on Happy Days was the Fonz. I mean, that's who it was. That's who you liked. So he was my favorite character on Happy Days, the Fonz by far. He stole that show. Henry Winkler stole that show. 773 area code says, Jimmy Walker as JJ on Good Times. 608 area code says, I like Red Fox. How did I not mention Fred Sanford? Fred G. Sanford. Fred Sanford, one of the greatest characters in the history of television, one of the funniest characters to this day. Yeah, way up there on my list. Thank you for mentioning Fred Sanford. Fred Sanford, man. Come on. I could stick your face in some dough and make me some gorilla cookies. Fred Sanford, man. One of the greatest characters of all time. Okay. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. We got a ton of texts coming in. We still have a lot of TV characters to talk about. And this, of course, is in honor of Penny Marshall, who passed away. And we're talking about great and funny and the most hilarious TV characters of all time. 312-981-7200. We'll continue after the news. Oh, the Mr. Grinch there. You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. 574 area code requesting that one. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It is that time of season. Wild Card Wednesday continues. 312-981-7200. Yeah. Coming up after the 4 o'clock news, it was a real, real joy to meet and to talk to Robert Zemeckis, one of my heroes. One of the greatest American filmmakers to ever direct any movies, directed several masterpieces. His latest is a tremendously beautiful movie called Welcome to Marwen. Patty Vasquez and I saw the movie, and then we together interviewed Robert Zemeckis, and we're going to play that interview back after the 4 o'clock news. And go see Welcome to Marwen. It opens this Friday. And I'm hosting a special screening if you want to come out and see it and hang out with my film club and me. I'm hosting the 7:10 p.m. screening at the AMC Rosemont 18 on Saturday night. This Saturday night, the 22nd, at 7:10 p.m., that's the screening that I will be hosting of Welcome to Marwen. We can watch it all together at the AMC Rosemont 18. That's formerly Movieco. Parking is free, and tickets are on sale right now. It's reserved seating, so go to amctheaters.com, click onto the 7:10 p.m. showing of Welcome to Marwen, pick out your seats. They'll be waiting for you. I'm going to introduce the movie. We'll all watch the new Robert Zemeckis movie together, and it's a great movie. I've already seen it. It's just great, and Steve Carell is amazing in it. And we'll watch it together, and it starts at 7:10, and then afterwards we'll have a little talk after and talk about the movie and the Zemeckis and how you guys felt about it. And it's just a little extra Nick DiGiulio Film Club event. And then our next official Nick DiGiulio Film Club is going to be on Tuesday, January 8th, and I will be screening the great sports movie Slapshot, which is one of the greatest movies of all time, best hockey movie ever made, one of the funniest movies ever, and that's on January 8th. And it's only $10. Parking is free for that, and starts at 8. So get your tickets now. Go to amctheaters.com. Get tickets for both of them. Get tickets for this Saturday's 7:10 performance of Welcome to Marwen, and then January 8th, the 8 o'clock performance of Slapshot. And they're available now at amctheaters.com. And we'll talk with Robert Zemeckis after 4 o'clock. Okay, we've been talking about the funniest TV characters of all time, great sitcom characters. Penny Marshall passed away, as you all know. Not only a great, a very successful and a great filmmaker, but obviously a terrific actress, and was really, really funny on Laverne and Shirley. And that's what we're talking about. Great, funny characters on TV. Bunch of texts here. 804 area code says, Tootie and Muldoon and Tootie's wife on Car 54. 773 area code, Barney Fife was very funny on the Andy Griffith Show. I would say he's one of the classic, one of the best TV characters of all time. One of the funniest and most memorable TV characters of all time. Barney Fife. So, let's see. Bob says, they're not characters, but Sid Scissor. Yeah, and he's a real cut up. Hold on a minute. Wait a minute. Sid Scissor and Imogene Coca from your show of shows. Brilliant. brilliant. Hey, are you a fan of Furley or Roper? Now, they're different types of humor.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. I'm a Roper guy. I like.
I would probably lean Roper as well.
Yeah, I mean, hey, but Furley rules, and you know, and it, I thought of it because he played Barney Fife. But yeah, I mean, Ralph Furley rules, and if only for his wardrobe, alone. 630 area code says, how about John Larroquette as Dan Fielding, the sex obsessed attorney? He was great. Larroquette was tremendous on Night Court. Tremendous. 773 area code. Maxwell Smart's one of my favorite characters. Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. The great Don Adams. And Gilligan is one of my favorite characters, the 773 area code says. Don Marengo says, my favorite character, hands down, has to be Larry David in Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah. An even more sort of intense version of George Costanza. Because George Costanza, for those of you who don't know, George Costanza is based on Larry David. And I think that's one of the reasons why the character stands out so much is because, you know, it's Larry David. It's 312 area code, Horseshack from Welcome Back, Kotter. When I was a kid, I loved Welcome Back, Kotter. I don't know if this person in the 312 area code has watched it recently, maybe as an adult. But that show sucks. But when I was a kid, I thought Welcome Back, Kotter was the funniest thing ever. And Horseshack was hilarious. But it's not. Here's the thing. If you want to preserve those memories about Welcome Back, Kotter, don't go back and watch it again. Just keep remembering how funny you thought it was when you were a kid. Please don't go back and watch it again, because I made the mistake of doing that like 15 years ago. I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to watch a couple episodes of Welcome Back, Kotter. I was like, oh my God, is this bad? This is like the worst show ever. Now I was 10, 11 years old. I had two Sweat Hogs T-shirts. All the catchphrases, up your nose with a rubber hose. Hi there. You know? No, it's a bad show. 815 area code, Phil Hartman on News Radio. Now, come on now, Bill McNeil. Bill McNeil from News Radio. That's one of those shows that I love that show. That's one of those shows that really... I was really struck with. I thought that show was great. And the quality of the writing was so high. The cast, Dave Foley, Stephen Root, Andy Dick, Moira Turney. And Phil Hartman was a genius on that show. He was genius on it as Bill McNeil. Dan, did you ever watch News Radio?
No, that was I was just too little too young when it was on to fully grasp it.
It's, you know, I will say this, Dan. It's reasonably accurate for what we do, you know? I mean, there are aspects of it that are right on the money, and then sometimes it's like, nah, that's not how we do it. But besides, you know, if you want to nitpick the fact that, you know, that show is about the workplace that you and I share, just on the simplest of levels, it's brilliant writing. Like, it's really funny. And man, Phil Hartman, so great on it. And we have News Radio to thank for Andy Dick. There'd be no, we wouldn't be, Joliet's own Andy Dick went to the same school as Esmeralda. Speaking of Esmeralda, she's going to be on the show Friday morning. Celebrate the holidays with Esmeralda. So that'll be fun to have her back in studio. We'll do a little, I think Skip Skipley is going to be in town. Just he'll stop by for the holidays, I think. Right, Dan?
I believe that is true, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Rick says Niles Crane from Frasier. That's another great show. That was another one. Yeah, Niles is great. Niles is great. Tim says, I always enjoyed the one-liners from Norm on Cheers. One, it's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing milk-bone underwear. Classic. And then this is one of my favorite lines. Tim just pulled one of my favorite Cheers lines, and it's the way Went delivers it. It's the way that George Went delivers it. The timing is so magnificent. I think he just gets off the phone. He's at the, you know, he's at the bar, and his wife Vera, as we all know, calls him at the bar. You know, one of the many times when he gets, you know, calls at the bar from Vera. So he gets off the phone. He hangs up the phone. And I believe Coach takes the phone away and puts it back behind the bar. And Norm goes, "Women, you can't live with them. Pass the beer nuts." That's the that's the best. Yeah. Yeah, Norm is great. Who would be the best character on Cheers? Man, you know, I would say Coach, then Woody, because I think Coach was the best. He was so great. And then Woody comes in, has these huge, huge shoes to fill. You know, one of the most beloved characters in TV. And then Woody Harrelson has to come in and play. He's got to play dumb because Coach was a little, you know, he was a little dim-witted. So along that, they wanted to put another guy behind the bar who had that same, who was on the same sort of avenue as Coach, being a little bit slow and a little dim-witted. And Woody Harrelson came in and made it his own. But yeah, everybody, Cliff is so funny. Carla's funny. That's a great show. That's another one of those shows where you could just pluck any of those characters out and they would make the list of the funniest TV characters. 479 area code says Maynard G. Krebs. Again, another vote for Bob Denver. 312 area code Mork for Mork, one of the funniest characters of all time. 224 area code Bob Newhart, especially when making phone calls. Bob Hartley is who he plays on the Bob Newhart show. Hey, there's another. You know we were talking about the Patricia Heaton thing. Suzanne Plachette on the Bob Newhart show. Oh my God! You know there were I've watched the Bob Newhart show all the time. You know, and in reruns I catch up on it and stuff. Suzanne Plachette. Let me just explain something about her. She was unbelievable. She again another brilliant person that taken from us too young. And she was, I mean, the quintessential hot 70s woman, the hot 70s wife on Bob Newhart. And I remember there were at least two episodes where his wife was upset about maybe a patient that Bob had. And it was a female and she was attractive and she had a crush on Bob. And Suzanne Plachette would get jealous. I'm like, you don't. Like, the plot would be, oh, my God, this is going to be competition for his wife. No, there's no competition for Suzanne Plachette. No, none. Yeah, she is something. 765 area code, Elliot Carlin, the perpetually neurotic patient from the Bob Newhart show. The patients were great, like the round robin. But Elliot Carlin was particularly hilarious on that show. Another high quality show. So, all right, let's take a break here and we'll jump back into it. We got a couple of phone lines open. People are calling in 312-981-7200, having some fun here talking about the funniest TV characters of all time. Which ones stand out for you? And then coming up after 4 o'clock, we'll play the interview that Patty and Vasquez and I did with the great Robert Zemeckis. That's coming up after the 4 o'clock news. Megan requesting Leighton Meester, Blair singing Baby Please Come Home for Christmas. I don't think I've ever heard that before. I know that she sings. Oh, I'm sorry. It's Blair from Gossip Girl. That's Leighton Meester. Good. Nice request, Megan. Bet Megan is a Gossip Girl fan. Like me. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And we're here till 5 a.m. And we're talking about the best TV characters, funniest TV characters of all time, greatest sitcom characters ever, the funniest. And we got a whole bunch of ones that we're going to talk about here. And we got people calling in and texting in at 312-981-7200. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. I'm calling in. I know it's not like one of the A-list shows you've mentioned, but I enjoy and laugh out loud at The King of Queens. And Jerry Stiller is so funny. If you've never seen that performance, he plays a very emotionally challenged father to Carrie. And, you know, they're very good to him. They let him live in their house, and he creates a lot of problems for them. but they're good-hearted. They treat them good.
Yeah, I've seen the show. I don't watch that show regularly, but I'm a massive fan of Jerry Stiller. I think Jerry Stiller is great. Yeah. And he's very funny. He's very funny on that show. And as I mentioned before, he's absolutely brilliant on Seinfeld. I mean, brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I like him on this one more, even, because he has so much more to do. And then another emotionally challenged, it's not a sitcom, but Monk, Tony Shalhoub. Watched that show?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tony Shalhoub was great. He was great on Monk. Yeah.
Oh, he is so funny. And I was thinking this year has been his year because he's on the TV show that's won awards. He and the Tony Award show.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, if you want an Oscar this year, just make a movie before the year's end with him. He'll bring you luck.
Yeah, no, he's doing pretty well. Okay, Paula, thanks.
Yeah, those are great.
Okay,
good
Paula.
Night.
See ya. Yeah, Tony Shalhoub, by the way, he won the Tony. Tony won the Tony. But he won the Tony for the band's visit. You know who also won a Tony? My friend David Cromer won a Tony for directing that show. You know, Dan, that was so weird, you know, to see a guy that I know, that I've been friends with, on the stage accepting a Tony. I was like, that's David Cromer. That's my friend David Cromer. Known him for years. And have texted back and forth since then. I was like, where's your Tony? He wants me to come out. He was like, come on out, man. I'll take you to see a whole bunch of shows. Because Jeff Daniels is on Broadway as Atticus Finch. Aaron Sorkin wrote the play based on To Kill a Mockingbird, his version of it. Jeff Daniels. And Bryan Cranston is in Network. They do a stage version of Network. And I haven't seen David's show, band's visit. So he's like, come out. So I don't know. I may just, because I think he'll put me up. I'm pretty sure he'll just put me up. But he's like, yeah, I'll get you backstage. Because he was, David is the guy. Have you seen The Newsroom with Jeff Daniels?
I have not.
Have you seen any of it? Have you seen that there's
There's that legendary scene that Sorkin wrote, yeah.
Cromer, David is the guy who's interviewing him. He's monitoring the interview when he goes off, when Jeff Daniels goes off on the college student, the girl who asked the question. So he knows him, and he's like, come on out, man. I'll take you backstage. You can meet Jeff Daniels. I'm like, man, you know what? Huh? So, I mean, you know, when you're a Tony Award winning director on Broadway, you know, and he invites you, a Tony Award winning director invites you to New York for a weekend of theater, which probably wouldn't require me to pay for the tickets. That's something I might do. That's something, you know, that's something in the new year. I might take David up on that, but. Yeah, but that was surreal. I have to say, that was surreal to see my friend up on stage accepting a Tony and predicting that it would happen like 20 years ago. I was like, this guy, because he's an astonishingly talented guy. I mean, he's a brilliant director and just a wonderful guy. So, and from Chicago. So, here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hey, how you doing, Nick?
All right.
How about your mentor, Dr. Johnny Fever?
He's my mentor? Dr. Johnny Fever is?
Well, yeah, he was a radio DJ, so yeah.
I was a Venus Flytrap guy. I was more of a Venus Flytrap guy on that show. I preferred him. But I was also a Blair guy. I wasn't a Lonnie Anderson guy. I liked Blair more. I was a weirdo on that show.
Yeah.
So, but no, I mean, that show is great. And Johnny Fever is a great character. A great character. Really funny.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
With the phone police and the mattress police. Yeah.
Yeah. Very funny. John, thanks, man.
Hey, take care, buddy.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, I like Venus Flytrap more. I don't know. I don't know why. And I can't even remember what Lonnie Anderson's character's name was on that show. Is it, Linda? No, not Linda. Lori? No. I don't remember. Jennifer. It's Jennifer. Right? Am I right?
Yes, Jennifer Marlowe.
Okay, it's Jennifer. I was a Blair guy. I would always, people would get into fights with me. Like, how could you like, I said, no, I'm a Blair guy. So, all right. The news is up next. What? Wow. That's a little intense. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. One any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Glenn with Arrogant Worms And that's Christmas is Almost Here. Arrogant Worms. I like that name. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio is here, and that's me. I'm your overnight dude. 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5, as we are every weekday morning. Coming up after the 4 o'clock news, we will play the interview that Patty Vasquez and I did with the great Robert Zemeckis, one of the greatest American directors ever. His latest movie is called Welcome to Marwin. It opens on Friday, and you should see it. And it would be fun if you came to see it on Saturday night at 7:10 at the AMC Rosemont 18, because I'm hosting that screening. So there you go. So that's coming up after 4 o'clock. We've been talking about the funniest characters of TV in TV, the funniest sitcom characters of all time, in honor of Penny Marshall, who passed away. And I'm one of those people who think that Laverne DeFazio is one of the funniest characters ever. So what makes you laugh? Who are the most memorable funny characters? By the way, Bailey is her name. What was I calling her? What did I call her? I didn't call her Bailey, did I? Anyway, I'm a Bailey girl, a Bailey guy when it comes to...
Blair.
I called her Blair. Oh, you know why? Because I was thinking of... because we played the...
Gossip Girl.
Leighton Meester thing. That's why. Bailey. Her name's Bailey. Yes, Bailey was... I enjoyed Bailey. So we're talking about funniest sitcom characters. You know, and funniest characters of all time. Of all time here. And we've got... Sheldon Cooper. People have mentioned Sheldon Cooper, which is a show that I do not watch. I don't watch adult Sheldon, nor do I watch young Sheldon. I say because I can't stand the Big Bang Theory. I just do not think that show's funny at all. I don't understand it. I've watched like 5-10 minutes of it here. I just don't think it's funny at all. I mean, it's not even remotely funny. So that the Sheldon in that regard, I would not vote for Sheldon in any way. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got a bunch of texts that just came in. 630 area code. Carl Reiner on the Dick Van Dyke Show. He wasn't on a lot, but he was the best. Yeah, he was hilarious on that show. Well, I mean, he also created it. Yeah, he was great on that show. When he appeared on that show, he was tremendous. Tremendous. 414 area code. The guys on Barney Miller. Boy, who would be the standout on Barney Miller? I would say Dietrich. I'd go with Dietrich. A lot of people would say Fish. Some people would say Nick because he makes bad coffee. But I'd go with Dietrich, Steve Landisberg, if I had to pick a character from Barney Miller, which is also another really good sitcom. And you know what's funny, Dan? Whenever I've talked in the past, years have passed, when I talk about, you know, what's the most accurate, you know, we were talking about how news radio is kind of accurate. It has moments of complete accuracy and other moments where it's not. But whenever I talk about, whenever a movie... or a TV show takes place in a certain workplace, we talk about accuracy. Every single time I ask policemen or detectives, what's the most accurate portrayal of being a detective? 90% of the time, people say Barney Miller. That's, you know, because they're just sitting around the office and, you know, and there's obviously it's a sitcom thing happening, but like that's what they, you know, it's like that's what you do. You file reports, you sit around the office, you go out on a call, you come back, you sit in the office. That's what. So a lot of people are like, yeah, Barney Miller is as close. It's not you know, not all the way accurate, but it's as close to accurate as it gets. Which I always found amusing that Barney Miller was the one that would got the most votes for accuracy. But yeah, I'd go Dietrich. Steve Landisberg, the late great Steve Landisberg. He's so good on that show. Oh man, what was Ron Carey's character name? Because he was hilarious too. And I'm blanking on his character name. Ron Carey. Dan, can you look it up, Dan? Ron Carey, the actor on Barney Miller. He was hilarious on it. He was great. But Dietrich had all the, you know, he was the weirdest character and I think the funniest one of all of them.
Carl Levitt.
Levitt. That's right, Levitt. Oh, man, that was a good show. Barney Miller, man. Also one of the greatest TV theme songs of all time, Barney Miller. Come on now. Here's Dave on WGN. Hi, Dave.
How you doing?
All right.
Good morning. A couple things about WTRP, one of my favorite sitcoms, Les Nessman.
Oh, yeah.
Every single episode, he had a bandage somewhere on his body.
Wait, is that right?
One episode, he would have one on the top of his bald spot on his head. Every finger, I mean, his arms, it was amazing.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah. The other day you were talking about things that you see in shows that, you know, and that was one that always struck me. Every single episode, he has a bandage somewhere on his body, okay. And make sure you see it.
That's cool.
And the fact that he kept trying to do the farm reports when they were trying to be a rock and roll radio station. And the walls, remember the tape on the floor, the walls, that's my office. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What a character.
Yeah, great character. Les Nessman is great. But, you know,
Thanks,
Dave, that show was full of great characters. It really was. That was a great
show.
And
I'm a Bailey guy, too.
Yeah, oh, you're a Bailey guy? Okay, cool, Dave. Thanks, man.
Oh, yeah.
Take care.
You know the guy that used to be Marcus Welby's sidekick? He divorced his wife to marry Jan Smithers.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Wow. All right, good for him. Jan Smithers. All right. All right, Dave, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Take care.
Yep, have a good morning. Bye.
I did not know that he always had a bandage on part of his body. That's pretty cool. Now, Dan, as you know, even though I created it, I don't watch it. If you had to pick the funniest friend on Friends, where would you go?
Yeah, you know, I think the obvious answer and the right answer is Chandler, just because he was the funny, sarcastic one, so he naturally had those lines. But,
right.
You know, again, every one of them had their moments, though, and in different ways. But yes, and probably I would go second than your girl Phoebe, played by Lisa Kudrow.
Lisa Kudrow, yeah. They have, I'm looking at this, and at a list here of the funniest TV characters. Chandler is on top. As far as the Friends go, this is the order that they have the Friends, Dan. Chandler is on top. Joey is second. Then Phoebe. Let's see. Maybe not all of them are on here. Nope. That's not a friend. That's not a friend.
Yeah, I think they did. The rest of them didn't make a list.
No,
which would make sense.
Okay, so what is it? So Schwimmer and the brother and sister are the only ones that aren't funny?
Well, and
Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston's character.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely one of those situations where...
They were more straight.
Yeah, I mean, Courtney, if you're going to rank them, I would go then Courtney Cox, Monica character, and then kind of Jennifer Aniston character, David Schwimmer, probably tied for that bottom rung because they were, you know, weren't giving as juicy... comedic bits. The comedy was definitely written for the other ones.
Right.
But that said, I mean, they all did have funny moments.
And they also, you know, the whole Ross Rachel thing was a thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And that wasn't necessarily always played for laughs, right? Because wasn't there an episode where Ross was going to get married and he says,
right,
I take Rachel.
Yeah.
And Rachel's like sitting in the
right
in the crowd going, huh?
Right.
So, all right. Well, there you go. So Chandler, I think most people, most people that I know who watch the show, I think Matthew Perry is the guy that they like the most on that show. Let's see. Lucille Bluth and Joe Bluth from Arrested Development. Yeah, I see, you know, that's both of the, well, that's another show. That's another show that is just ridiculously full of great characters. Like Tobias on Arrested Development, Tobias, David Cross. Oh, my God, is he funny on that. But I would, if I had to pick my favorite character on Arrested Development, it's Job. I mean, just for reintroducing the world to the Final Countdown by Europe. Because that, and then whenever I hear that riff, the first thing I think of is Will Arnett. That's the very first thing I think of whenever that stupid riff for the Final Countdown by Europe, whenever I unfortunately hear it, that's the first thing I think of. is Job. 608 area code says, Brad Garrett is great as Robert on Everybody Loves Raymond. Yes, he is funny. He's funny. I still go with Peter Boyle. Peter Boyle always made me laugh the most on that show. And, of course, you have the eye candy of Patricia Heaton. 815 area code says, King of Queens was very funny and everyone was really so talented. Jerry Stiller was great as the obnoxious dad. Kevin Smith was great at physical comedy. He is, for a big guy, you know, anybody who's seen Paul Blart Mall Cop knows how light on his feet and that he could be. Jim Nabors is Gomer Pyle, 419 area code. All right, that's a good choice. 763, Bill Daly from I Dream of Jeannie. I liked him better on Bob Newhart. I thought Bill Daly was funnier on Bob Newhart. He's funny on I Dream of Jeannie, but he's really funny as the pilot neighbor on Newhart. 815 area code, he's a minor character, but Floyd the Barber. I always found Floyd weird. He's weird, man. Scott from Streamwood said Grandpa from the Munsters. Oh, see, I got to go Herman. That's another show I love. That's another show with all the I love all the characters on that show. I got to go Herman. Fred Gwynn was a damn national treasure. From the Munsters to Car 54 to My Cousin Vinny to Pet Sematary. He was the man. Fred Gwynn was the man. And every time Herman, you know, has a fit or gets excited and jumps up and down so that ceilings crash down on him, I laugh my ass off to this day. Every time Herman has a fit and destroys something or rips the handle off of a door or smashes, breaks something because of it, but especially when ceilings fall on him, that's my favorite. But Grandpa's funny. Grandpa's obviously very funny. So, all right, let's take a break here for the weather, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about this. And then after the 4 o'clock news, you'll hear our interview with Robert Zemeckis. 773 area code requesting the Little Stinkers with "I Farted on Santa's Lap." I love that one. Wildcard Wednesday, yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you want to join in. Coming up after 4 o'clock, Patty Vasquez and I interviewed Robert Zemeckis, director of so many classic movies, and his newest movie is Welcome to Marwen, and we talk about that and his career, and that's coming up after. We'll play that back after 4 o'clock. We also have a Blackhawks Express to play, a rare pleasant one, so we'll play that a little bit later on. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, we've been talking about the funniest characters in TV. Funniest sitcom characters, funniest TV characters. Somebody mentioned Dwight Schrute, and that's another show that has like so many funny characters. It's just crazy. It would really be hard to pick, although maybe Michael Scott, I guess. We have here a vote for Leslie Knope from Parks and Rec, played by Amy Poehler. One of Leslie's great quotes is, what I hear when I'm being yelled at is people caring loudly at me. If Leslie Knope were real, she would be incredibly annoying, but since she's a fictional character played by Amy Poehler, she's endearing, lovable, and fantastically funny. Poehler is one of the greatest comedians of our time, and she gives one of the most memorable performances as Leslie Knope. That's another show that Parks and Rec that has a bunch of great characters. I think I got to go with Andy. And when Chris Pratt was all chubby, I like my Chris Pratt chubby and dumb. You know what I mean? Dan, you know what I'm talking about? I like chubby, dumb Chris Pratt.
Sure.
Not that I dislike
buff.
You know, buff and heroic,
yeah.
Chris Pratt, but I like puffy and I like chubby and dumb Chris Pratt. Andy, and why I'm blanking on Aubrey what's her name on the show? Why am I blanking on her name? But them together, when they became a couple, that was
April.
April, right. April and Andy. That's you know, that's the deal right there. So, more texts coming in. 312-981-7200. 815 area code. The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Mary and Rhoda were great together, and Ted Knight was hilarious. Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Ted was Ted Knight was great. And here's the other thing. You know, Dan, all of the comedy stars of like my generation who were in Caddyshack, you know, you got your Bill Murray's, you got your Chevy Chase's, you got your Rodney Dangerfield's, all these guys. My favorite performance in Caddyshack is Ted Knight. I think Ted Knight is the funniest thing in Caddyshack. And Caddyshack is filled with, like I said, you know, incredibly funny people doing really funny stuff. And everybody's very funny in it. But for me, the standout performance, he gets a laugh every time he opens his mouth. I think Ted Knight, every line that Ted Knight has in Caddyshack is funny. And he was great on Mary Tyler Moore. The bakery guy says, funny character and attractive TV mom, Marion Ross. Also, Rosemarie and Maury Amsterdam from Dick Van Dyke. Yeah, they pretty much stole that show. They were great on that show. Brian says, a couple from Home Improvement stand up, but Wilson takes it. Is Wilson the guy with no face?
Yes, he did not have a face.
773 area code says, if cartoons count Bugs Bunny, well, I mean, come on now. Come on, Bugs Bunny. 773 area code says, back to Cheers. I liked Frasier. In fact, I was driving 2 days ago at Walton and Rush, and Kelsey Grammer crossed the street right in front of me, and I freaked out. What? What is Kelsey Grammer? What is he doing in town at Walton and Rush? Is there some sort of Kelsey Grammer thing happening? This was 2 days ago? Kelsey Grammer in the middle of December is walking around downtown Chicago? Wow, all right. 815 area code, Al Bundy for the... Al Bundy married with children. Says Al Bundy for the win from the 815 area code. Yeah, I can't believe it took this long for somebody to mention Al Bundy. One of the greatest TV sitcom characters of all time. Al Bundy. God, he's funny. And then 773 area code, Bull Shannon from Night Court. Oh, yeah, Richard Mull and his big bald head. I remember many, many, many years ago, Eddie Schwartz interviewing Richard Mull at like 3 o'clock in the morning. I was listening to it right here on this radio station. I have no idea why this stays with me. But he was asking him about a character that he was, because Eddie clearly had like his credits in front of him. Like he had, again, and I don't think Eddie was familiar with Richard Mull, maybe a little bit. But he asked him about this movie called The Sword and the Sorcerer, where he played like the villain in it. And I remember Eddie Schwartz asking him the question. Clearly, he'd never heard of the movie, didn't know what the character was. And then Richard Mull started doing an impression of the character because he had like an accent and a deep voice in it. And Eddie's like, oh, what's that? And he's like, that's the character you just asked me. That's the character you just asked me about. So, Eddie Schwartz, man. I just remember that. I don't know why, but the Richard Mull interview, 3:30 in the morning from many years ago, stayed with me. All right. Let's take a break. We got the news coming up next, and then afterwards, you'll hear Patty Vasquez and myself interviewing the great Robert Zemeckis. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. A few nights ago, Patty Vasquez and I got to interview director Robert Zemeckis a day after we had seen his new movie, Welcome to Marwen. And this is the interview, and Patty gets us all started.
You're listening to WGN Radio, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, in a incredible twist of events in my life. First, I became a host of WGN Radio and never thought that would happen. And one day, a friend of mine, Michelle L'Amour, said, I have a friend who's an incredible author and she's come out with a book. And would you have her on your show? And I said, absolutely. And I don't know what the universe had in store, but I became friends with Leslie Zemeckis, who is an incredible writer, historian, and actress. And along the way, had the opportunity to meet her husband, Robert. And when they asked me if I was interested in interviewing him, I was like, well, yeah, hold on a second. Let me also make sure that my fellow host, Nick DiGilio, is available. Because as many of you know, Nick is a big fan. Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah, hi.
No, to say I'm a big fan of Robert Zemeckis is an understatement.
I know.
One of my favorite filmmakers that's ever lived and has made, in my opinion, not one, two, but several masterpieces. And just a huge fan.
And we are honored to have in studio with us, Robert Zemeckis.
Thank you. Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Nick and I had the, it was wonderful to see Welcome to Marwen yesterday. And I get the chills thinking about it. And I know that Nick saw a lot in it that I wouldn't necessarily pick up on. Because Nick was, we were on the way out and he was like, and then there was this. And then there's another. So, Nick, I wanted to start there because there's so much for me when it comes to the idea of the spirit and creating art and living through tragedy that speaks a lot to a lot of my experience and what I felt through the movie, but I also wanted to focus on that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were a lot of things in the movie that were totally Zemeckis, which makes sense because you made the movie. But there were also allusions to other movies, and there's obvious, I don't want to give anything away, but late in the film, there's a very obvious one. But real quick question, was the General Stilwell thing, was that a tribute to 1941?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how many people know who General Stilwell is? But you know,
I'm kind of an obsessive fan. But one of the questions that I have for you is: no other filmmaker that I can think of has been on the cutting edge of technology as much as you have been. And I'm talking all the way back to like Back to the Future and a groundbreaking film like Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And now, as this technology moves on, and by the way, the stuff that you do in this movie is flawless. Like going from the motion capture to the real stuff is just amazing. How do you feel about as the technology has moved on over the years, and you've been on the edge of it? What's going on now in terms of technology that you're looking forward to?
Well, you know, I'm not really like a technology geek. I just like to, you know, look around when I'm making a movie to see what the new tools are and figure out a way to utilize them. I think, you know, what is obviously happening, because, you know, the digital cinema is digital, and the horsepower of processing moving images is getting more and more powerful every hour. That we're probably around the, you know, it's, we can create any image, we can create any sound, and we're probably, it's right around the corner where we'll be able to create a photoreal human character that no one will be able to tell is an avatar, just like we can do in still photographs now.
Mm. And that's kind of explained or explored in the film. That's kind of one of the themes in Marwen that you kind of explore.
You mean? We use a process. We got an advanced performance capture that we use to create these. You know, the stories about this guy and his imagination who creates this doll world, and these dolls are populated by he creates a action figure or a fashion doll based on people that he knows in real life. And we use our actors and actresses who play the live action characters to also do the performances of the dolls. And it's pretty good. It's pretty spectacular.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
I was blown away. I mean, I couldn't decide. I mean, you know, there were moments where I was like, it's just so incredible to take in, right? That blending of going from live action of what's actually happening and being, for him to be able to escape into that and play things out differently is remarkable.
Yeah. And it's now what we should probably explain what the movie's about. Sure. And it's based on a true story as well.
Right. Yeah. You want me to explain?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's based on a true story. I came across it when I was channel surfing and I stumbled upon the documentary Marwen Call. It was about this guy's life, and I was, you know, and it's a story about this guy who tragically is beaten in a hate crime, almost to death. And he was an illustrator, and he lost all his memory of his past life and his ability to use his hands to draw. So he had no resources and he had no money. And so when he got out of the hospital to process this tragedy, he started to create this 1/6 scale miniature world populated by these action figures, and started to take photographs of these tableaus that he set up. And that's how he worked through his PTSD. And when I saw the movie, what struck me was, you know, that it was this, you know, this amazing, hopeful story about the healing power of art. And I was able to identify with that. And I think it's a universal story. Everyone, I think, uses their artistic expression or their imagination to process what's going on in their life, complicated things that are going on in their life. But then also, between these photos that he took, were there were these elaborate stories, and I thought, now there's a movie. I thought, now if we can go into his mind's eye, into his imagination, and see this world that he could only take still photographs of come to life, that's the stuff of movies.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. And you know, to the idea of the healing power of art, what I thought about when I was walking back from the screening was, you know, there are people who choose to be artists because they want to be famous, or they see someone else who's really good at something and they want to be able to do that. But Mark, who, you know, doesn't even remember much of what he did or why he did it, still is driven to do it. And that's just somebody who needs to.
Yeah, and he's a pure artist in that respect, because he's not looking to be famous, he's not looking to make money, he's just doing it because he has to do it.
Right.
And that's just still to this day, and that's really fantastic about him.
You know, it's an interesting that you point, because you've explored this kind of theme before in other movies about, like, sort of the isolated person who has to express themselves in order to change, and like in Contact, mm-hmm. and in Castaway. And it seems to be a theme that you've explored before. And you just mentioned that you could identify with it. Is it something personal about this theme?
Oh, God, no. Well, not on this. I mean, thank God I never, you know, had to suffer, a tragedy like he did. But no, I mean, like, I understand the power of art to help simplify complex things that I'm feeling. And I think, and that's the simplest form. And that's why we listen to music. That's why we read poems, why we look at paintings, why we read novels and go to movies, is because that's what it does for us. It helps to simplify these complicated emotions, if you will, that we're feeling. I think that's a universal theme, and I think that no matter what you do, whether you sing in the church choir or you bake cupcakes, you're that's an artistic expression, and you have and humans have to do that. And so I think the story can touch anyone who goes to see the film.
And that's Robert Zemeckis talking about his new movie, Welcome to Marwen. Patty Vasquez and I conducted that interview a few nights ago, and it was just great. We'll continue with more of it right after we take a break here for some weather. Today, cloudy and breezy with a high of 51. Tonight, more clouds, a low around 39. Tomorrow, periods of rain, a high near 47. For Friday, cloudy, high near 37. Saturday, partly cloudy and a high near 39. It's currently 33 degrees at O'Hare. It's 34 at Midway, 35 at the lakefront. We'll take a break and more with Robert Zemeckis after this. All right, let's get back to the conversation that Patty Vasquez and I had with the great Robert Zemeckis.
The other thing that struck me, I did go and seek out clips of Marwen Call, and hope I'll have a chance to see it very soon, the whole documentary. But the way he's now been able, Mark, in real life and in the film, connect with the people he makes the dolls about or mm-hmm. for.
Right.
And because it seems as though before this beating, he wasn't necessarily that connected to the people in his community either.
No, he was completely isolated. As a matter of fact, he was very much, addicted to alcohol. And, he was struck sober after the beating, which is another amazing part of the whole story. But yeah, when you're in that disease, that disease isolates you completely from the world. So yeah, he was just in his own, addiction. But what he does now is, you know, he honors the people who are important to him in his life.
Right.
And what he does is he, you know, he honors you by creating a alter ego that he populates in this, you know, this, well, it's not, his town is actually does exist. He built it in his backyard. But the adventures are imaginary that he puts these people in. And the people who are in his life are the people who he creates these dolls who are, the, you know, are alter egos. And they populate his village and his imagination. And they're put on these wild adventures. You know, they're zapped back into 1944 Belgium, which is where his doll adventure takes place. Yeah. I know it's strange. You got to see the movie.
It is a hard film to describe.
It
works on so many levels, though. I mean, it's an incredibly emotional film. Like, I cried and I was invested in the character. And by the way, Steve Carell is.
Yeah.
Astonishing in the movie. It is such a great performance.
And I want everyone to know, too, that it's not a heavy.
No.
It's sad. It's got comedy in it. It's got action, a lot of action. It talks about, you know, female empowerment and all kinds of, you know, he's got these really, you know, badass women who are his protectors and his guardians. And, you know, it's got a lot of fun stuff, but it is a heartfelt and heartbreaking, but ultimately I think it's an emotional, hopeful movie.
It's completely hopeful. And also just flat out entertaining. Like, if you want to go and have a great time at a movie, this is the movie to see. And just so astonishingly well made in terms of special effects, and the action sequences are so well put together. It's just it's a flat out really entertaining movie, and you'll be moved too. But that's like, that's an extra,
right?
So, but right. You know, I wanted to mention that, you know, I was talking about the technology that you worked with that period of time when you were working on the animated stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What did you get out of that from 2004 to like 2000?
Oh, you mean the performance capture stuff?
Yeah, the performance capture stuff. When you started with Polar Express and went through to Beowulf.
Well, you know, I went through a stage where I loved it because when I discovered that on Polar Express, it was this wonderful thing that happened for me, which is this technology arrived that enabled me to separate performance from what I call the tyranny of filmmaking. It gave me, as you know, as a movie director, which you know you could say is, you know, maybe someone who's you know, not completely, maybe somewhat of an egomaniac, but I mean, a film director, I was able to just do performance and concentrate on that without having to worry about lighting and hitting marks and, you know, setting up the camera and get the performance exactly right and allowing the actor to perform in continuity from beginning to end. And then I was able to then do the cinema at my leisure, because I would put the cameras in virtually and create, you know, and the performances never changed. So I never had to torture my actors by making them bend into a pretzel so I could get my really cool shot and torture them doing take after take because they can't hit the focus, or there was an extra in the background who looked in the lens.
Right.
All those horrible things that... that wreck, and there's nothing worse when you're there as a director and, you know, the actor is doing the scene and he does a turn on a line and he does a line reading that you don't know where it came from, but it's just so magnificent and you're there and you're just exhilarated and you say, cut, and the camera operator says, I need another one.
Oh.
And because, why? Well, I the focus buzzed.
Oh.
And you know, there's no way that the actor, because it just came, it was magic. And you know, so anyway, I was, after making all these movies, I was thrilled to be liberated from that.
And what did you bring from working with that? Because the movie that you did after you did that series of the motion capture stuff was really, I mean, you really jumped back into the deep end with Flight. And what was that, coming off of those films, what was it like to do Flight? Because it's such a, you know, it's a great film, too, and Denzel gives such an astonishing performance in that.
Yeah, well, you know, it for me, it was all just fine. I just rolled back into it. I mean, it was like, you know, I was always doing the same thing, even though I was working in this different discipline for a while. But when I got back into flight, it was great to be back there. I mean, you know, there were times when, you know, the There were times when there was an imperfection in the way we did a shot or something, and I just had to let it go, you know. And it's fine, you know. It's just so I don't have an agenda either way, but reflecting back on it, everything that I did in my career, I mean, everything I did in my career, if you want, probably going back to, say, Roger Rabbit to start, from a technological point of view, prepared me to do Marwan.
Mm.
Welcome to Marwan, because I used all my tricks in this movie.
That's what it seems. That's exactly what it seems like. That's exactly what it seems like.
Yeah, everything from, I mean, the humor and the heart of it, you know. I mean, and it's amazing. Like, you can be invested in a movie, but I don't know if Nick could hear me, because I was so distraught about the Jeep with all the women in it as a car turned around. Mm. Right, and I wasn't sure I was going to be able to handle it if something. I was
you thought I was going to get run over.
Yeah.
I didn't want to ruin it for anybody, but I was like, oh, please don't scream in front of Nick.
Well, I was going to scream too,
I wasn't sure if I could if physically handle it. And that's one of the things that, you know, when Nick does his movie club out in Rosemont and did the Summer of Zemeckis, I know that the audience connects with so many of the movies that he showed. For me, growing up, Back to the Future, I think I mentioned this when I geeked out in front of you when you came in with Leslie. I've only written two fan letters in my entire life, right. And one of them was to Svengoolie, and I'm not sure if you're familiar. He's a local hero, and the other was to Michael J. Fox. Uh-huh. And that movie just—I had to see it over and over again. I was a kid, and my parents let me catch the bus and go to the Pickwick Theater and see it over and over again. I know Nick has movies on his list that are similar viewers.
Yeah,
it's just I grew up loving movies, and you just have touched so much of my life.
Yeah.
That's why I was so thrilled to have you in.
So many movies that you've made have been cornerstones for me. You know, I think Used Cars is the funniest movie of all time.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And I'm still astonished. And by the way, for people who get the DVD, listen to the audio commentary.
That was one of the most fun I ever did.
Oh, my God. It's the funniest.
It was because we had Kurt Russell, who was on. He was on, and it was, I know, I that was hilarious.
It is so entertaining. But let me quickly say that one of my favorite moment of the DVD commentary on Used Cars, and I have many favorite moments, is you guys reacting to the shot of Garrett Graham almost getting hit by the car.
Right.
I mean, just like, you're like, how did we get away with this?
Right. I know. Those were the days when, you know, I get goosebumps thinking of the stuff I did. How about, you know, dropping two real kids out of the back of a station wagon? I mean, they would put me in jail to do that nowadays, you know. I mean, even though their father was a stuntman, you know, you can't do stuff like that anymore.
But very quickly, I mean, so many movies meant a lot to me. Like Castaway, I think, is a stunt. Who Framed Roger Rabbit is one of my favorite movies of all time, and I can watch it over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I also think that Bob Hoskins deserves so much credit for that performance, because it's not only did he get the accent, did he get the style? He's acting with nobody.
Like, oh yeah!
I mean, it's an astonishing performance.
Oh yeah! And when I you know, when I said to him, so, you know, Bob, you know how you doing? He goes, oh, you know, it's, a lot of times I get less from the actors I work with, so I'm just doing perfectly fine here.
And Forrest Gump, and by the way, the Zemeckis Fest that I hosted at my film club, we had huge crowds, and I do a Q&A afterwards, and we talk about the movies, and we showed Used Cars and Back to the Future and Forrest Gump, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Back to the Future 3, and I'm hosting a screening of Marwan.
Fabulous.
At the Rosemont Theater, the AMC Rosemont, on Saturday the 22nd.
Awesome. So. Perfect.
Yeah, well, I'll be there. It has been an absolute honor. We're so grateful for your time.
Well, thank you.
On behalf of our listeners, too, I know that you've got such a busy schedule.
Appreciate it.
It's wonderful. Thank you, Nick.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Well, that was awesome. That was Robert Zemeckis, one of my massive heroes, and it was so great to meet him and talk to him. And he was really kind afterwards, and we took a bunch of pictures, and he signed a bunch of my stuff. I totally geeked out, and it was everything that I thought it would be to meet Robert Zemeckis. And his new movie is great. We'll talk more about it in a little bit. We got a break here. We got the news coming up. It's officially Christmas time now. It is officially Christmas time now. 815 area code. Our very own Orion Samuelson right there with the Oofta Band and I Yes Go Nuts at Christmas. See, now it's official. When I hear Orion singing that song, I know the holiday season has officially been rung in. How's it going, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here till 5 a.m. We have a Blackhawks Express to play in a few minutes. They actually won, so it will be a pleasant experience to relive last night's game as opposed to the unpleasant experience it's been for, a bunch of nights. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Dan, you a fan of the holiday cookies?
I do enjoy a holiday cookie.
Do you enjoy a good holiday cookie?
I don't know anybody who doesn't.
Do you have a favorite kind of holiday cookie?
You know, the sugar cookie is a good one, but, you know, a cookie don't, I don't know, even know the proper term for it. I do believe it's on the list, but it's the one with the Hershey Kiss inside.
The one with the Hershey Kiss in the middle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't see those any other time of year.
No, you don't. It's I don't know why. Because you can buy Hershey's Kisses, you know.
Year-round.
Year-round.
Hershey would like you to, in fact.
Yes, they would. So, well, we have somebody rated the holiday cookies in order here. The Daily Meal, someone at the Daily Meal put these together. We rate our favorite holiday cookies from worst to best. Now, I don't really know if there's a... Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Hold on. I'm a little distracted because Gritty just took out Santa Claus on the ice, dressed as Santa Claus. So Gritty is dressed as Santa Claus, the Philadelphia Flyer. And he just knocked him out and threw him into the boards. He took Santa, knocked him out and threw him into the boards, and then whipped a wreath at him. I love Gritty. Oh, and can I take this opportunity? You know, Deanna, who is a great listener of ours, and she also loves to give gifts. Deanna Minkler, she was really kind enough to give us some gifts. Like, Dan, you and you got some gifts from,
yes,
from
her. Yes, very nice for
her. And Vic got some gifts from her. And she got me a Gritty bobblehead. And it's right on the desk in the office. It's right there. Gritty bobblehead. And Eric, by the way, Eric Hankey is another guy who sends a gift every year. He got me a Pee Wee Herman bobblehead. So we got two new bobbleheads on the desks in the office. But yeah, the Gritty bobblehead is awesome. I just want to thank Deanna. She's just way too kind.
Thank you so much. That was way too nice of you.
Yeah, it's very generous of you. We appreciate that. But anyway, cookies. All right, oatmeal raisin. There's nothing particularly healthy about oatmeal raisin cookies. Like all cookies, they're loaded with sugar and butter, but they sure do taste like they're good for you, and that's a bummer. A staple of childhood lunchboxes across the country, oatmeal raisin cookies should be relegated to weekday cookie status, not for a special occasion. Wow, going off on the oatmeal raisin. I happen to like oatmeal raisin. Dan, you a fan of the oatmeal raisin?
I'm not, because I always think it's a chocolate chip cookie, and then...
That's the big complaint. It's like you pick it up and you go, oh, and your mouth and your taste buds are all ready to bite into a chocolate chip cookie and boom, oatmeal raisin.
Yep.
Now, I don't even know how to pronounce this next one. Is it Pfeffermousse? Pfeffermusse. Pfeffermusse. Pfeffermousse? Do we have somebody? Do we have the sexy lady to pronounce it? Is there even
Pfeffernusse?
Oh, Pfeffernusse. Pfeffernusse.
Pfeffernusse.
Okay, Pfeffernusse.
Pfeffernusse.
Okay, got it. So Pfeffernusse. Pfeffernusse translates from German to English to peppernut, and that's what these cookies are made of. Yes, black pepper combines with anise, cloves, and other spices for a holiday cookie that has quite a bite to it. Let's just say this ethnic holiday cookie is an acquired taste. I think I'd like that. Pfeffernusse. Certainly has a great, great name. The Pfeffernusse. Chocolate chip. Trust us, we love a perfect chocolate chip cookie recipe, but like the oatmeal raisin cookie, lower in this ranking, a chocolate chip cookie is a little pedestrian for the holidays, don't you think? Now, how can you just diss a chocolate chip cookie? again, Dan, you can't. I mean, it doesn't. You know,
there's nothing pedestrian about it.
No, it's a chocolate chip cookie. There's nothing bad about a chocolate chip cookie. Next on the list is shortbread. There's something simple and delightful about a shortbread. I love shortbread cookies. I really, really love them. At its core, the cookie is just a few simple ingredients, but it brings a lot of delight. Shortbread can be customized for the holidays with some festive ingredients and decoration, but there are better alternatives on the cookie tray. This person's being real tough on cookies here. I love a good shortbread cookie. How about peanut butter cookies? Nothing says homemade cookie tray quite like a peanut butter cookie. With these fork-made crosshatches and the perfect crumbly yet somehow oh-so-soft texture, the cookie is a comfort in a bite. Like most of the cookies on the bottom half on our rankings, though, these are a delight but not particularly festive for the holiday season. Wow, man. Pecan tassies. For the uninitiated, pecan tassies are like tiny pecan pies. Really. And just like a proper pecan pie, or pecan, if you want, they're delicious. That's how, that, by the way, that's how Clint Eastwood pronounce it, is it, in the Mule. What do you got in the, what do you got in the back of the truck, sir? Pecans. But because they're bite-sized, they're beautiful and a perfect addition to any holiday cookie tray. So why are they just at number 10 on this list? Well, as anyone who's ever made a pecan tassie will tell you, they're a pain in the butt to make. Just stick to a classic regular-sized pecan pie. So they're criticizing making them. Ranking chocolate chip cookies really low on the list, and now they're talking about, oh, these are a pain in the neck to make. Don't make them. Next is M&M cookies. When all other lunchbox cookies are relegated to the bottom five status, why do M&M cookies crack the top 10? Well, because of those festive red and green chocolate-coated candies, of course. Nothing says Christmas time is here quite like that iconic color scheme. All right. And let's see. Thumbprints. A holiday cookie needs to be three things to be considered a classic. It needs to be sweet and delicious, of course. It needs to have a festive color scheme or flavor profile, and it needs to be beautiful when presented on a tray. The thumbprint has all three things. This jam-filled cookie recipe is endlessly customizable and always a winner. All right. There you go. We're moving along here. You have a favorite holiday cookie? 312-981. Do you make those pecan tassies and they're a real pain in the butt to make? We want to hear from you. Holiday cookies is the topic. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. So get in here and let's talk holiday cookies. All right, let's take a break. We got the weather. And then after the weather, we'll have a break and we'll come back for a very nice and good Blackhawks Express from last night's game. So we're talking about Christmas cookies, and the Daily Meal has ranked some of them. And they're being a little harsh, I think, on some of these Christmas cookies. But in traffic this morning and every morning is Mary Vandeveld. Mary, I understand
hey guys,
that you spent most of yesterday making cookies.
Yeah, I'm behind my schedule for cookies. Yes, yeah, so yesterday I was in the kitchen all afternoon baking cookies, and my situation is my son is allergic to peanut butter.
Oh, no.
So he, you know, he was at work. But he's like, Mom, is today the day you're doing the peanut butter? Make sure you light the candles, because he can smell it. He walks in the door. So I'm like, luckily it was a nice day. So, you know, I opened the windows a little bit, but I made my peanut butter kisses.
Okay. What are those? What are those like?
Peanut butter cookies. There's my husband's Grandma Ella's recipe. And you put the, you know, the chocolate kiss in the middle.
Oh, that's the one with the chocolate kiss in the middle.
Then right. I do peanut butter clusters. Peanut clusters, which are just a glob of chocolate with peanuts inside of them. And you harden them. And, you know, they're really good. And also, what else did I make? Oh, the crescent cookies. The pecan crescent cookies.
Okay.
Shaped like moons. So I did all my peanut related cookies yesterday. Today I have to do sugar cookies. the pretzels, you know, the candied pretzels.
Oh, those are good.
Yeah, and then you do the sprinkles on those.
Oh, those are
sugar
good.
The shaped sugar cookies. Gotta do those. Fudge. Haven't done the fudge yet.
Wow.
And oatmeal cookies. I think I'm going to skip the oatmeal cookies this year because I'm behind.
Oh. Now, do you do the oatmeal raisin or just regular oatmeal?
I just do regular. I do oatmeal with powdered sugar on top. Mm. They're really good. It's like four sticks of butter.
Oh,
it's a lot
man.
Of butter.
Now, let's talk about ingredients. How much stuff do you go through? I mean, if you're making batches of stuff like this, how much butter do you have to buy?
Well, I went to Walmart the day before and stuff, and they're like, they need some stocking going on because I was like, where's the, you know, they ran out of Toll House chocolate chips.
Ooh, that's not good at this time of year.
You know, I went with the Walmart brand, which you're fine. They're okay. I didn't want to, but I did. And yeah, they were running out of stuff. So yeah, you got to get the flour, the sugar, the brown sugar. Make sure you have salt. Make sure you have vanilla. Once in a while, I run out of that. Eggs. You know, the Toll House cookies, the peanut butter chips. You need those. The white chips. It's crazy. You got to make sure you have the list.
Now, do you do this every year? Yes.
I bring them in on Friday. So Friday, if you're here, I will bring in my platter.
I'll be here Friday morning.
Okay, yeah. You'll get some.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And then I'm on vacation after that. But
I'll make sure I bring them. That's why I got to get them done. I got to bring them to work on Friday.
Well, you can't tease us with all these with all these delicious descriptions of these cookies that you're making.
Yeah, I do like doing it. You know, I had my Christmas music blasting.
Oh, that's cool.
And it was fun. I had a good time.
Oh, that's cool. Well, I'm looking forward to Friday now. I have to get a doggy bag and bring them home and I'll eat them all during the day on Friday.
Yeah. Well, I made brownies on Friday for the Christmas party. I forgot about them and left them in the refrigerator.
I forgot all about them for the Christmas party.
I just hope I don't forget them, Nick.
Don't forget them. Don't forget them.
It's that time of year. I'm forgetting everything.
The peanut butter blossoms, by the way, are the technical name for the the peanut butter. That's with the Hershey Kiss in the middle.
Yeah, I call them peanut butter kisses.
Peter Cutter Kiss. Yeah, okay. And then, of course, they list the number one cookie on here as the cutout sugar cookies.
Yep. That's what I'll be doing those.
That's the number one. They said the number one spot on the list belongs to the classic cutout sugar cookies.
And I cheat. I buy them already cut.
Oh, well, that's good. Whatever you got
to
do.
I do. That's the one thing I cheat on.
Well, listen,
I just don't have time to do the.
I was going
to
say, with the workload that you've already acquired, I don't think you can. I think people will forgive you for the pre-cut.
Thanks.
All right, Mary. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, we'll take a break, and the opening bell is coming up after the break here.